Oh, Steve, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. It's Thursday. We're thrilled that you're here. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200.
Good morning.
Hi, Wendy. That was a very interesting way of saying hi.
No, I don't want to do it the same way every
seemed
day.
Seemed very cultured. It seemed like you took elocution lessons or something.
Electrocution
lessons. Speaking of getting electrocuted, is Gary Johnson done?
Wow.
I think so.
He is, isn't he, Steve? He is, isn't he?
Well, he's not going to grow. You know, he was trying to get to 15% to get in the debates.
Yeah.
That fate was probably sealed today. But I think a lot of people who are supporting a Libertarian candidate are going to support him anyway, you know? So I don't know if he'll drop a lot. He's not going to pick up a lot.
He had such a chance.
Yeah, he had no chance. What do you mean?
He didn't have any chance.
He had somewhat of a chance. I mean,
people are just so disenchanted
with the candidates right now on both sides.
Traditionally, if you look at what the third party candidates, their arc, you know, they tend to peak sometime in the summer.
Yeah.
And then after Labor Day, generally they start to drop off anyway. That's been history. So, you know, he was on the gunny sack getting ready to get on the slide maybe anyway. But, I was listening to it, and when it happened,
this was on Morning Joe.
On MSNBC, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then, you know, I tended to think, well, he just misspoke. You know, kind of had a brain spasm. And,
yeah.
But then I think Steve Cochran just played a little bit of that Mark Halperin interview that came minutes afterward, and he didn't quite say that. I mean, he kind of copped to the fact that he needs to learn more.
Yeah. He was sitting at a table, and for people who aren't aware of what happened on MSNBC earlier this morning on Morning Joe, Mark Halperin asked him the question about what is Aleppo. We have the audio.
It was not Mark. It was the former Boston columnist, Mike Barnacle.
Mike Barnacle,
asked the question.
Arrgh. All right. Of Barnacle Bill fame. And he's sitting, Gary Johnson is sitting at the time at a table with, I believe, four different questionnaires or correspondents who all seemed aghast at the fact that he wasn't up on what seems to be a pretty important topic of what Aleppo is. Here's a little bit from earlier this morning.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Well, with regard to Syria,
and then it just goes on as he kind of grasps.
It wasn't a very good answer after that either.
You know, it was similar to, I think everybody at some time is in school where you get an essay question that you didn't study for, and all you do in your answer is just kind of reiterate the question.
Right.
You just kind of go, well, photosynthesis is important, as many of us know, for a lot of different reasons, some of them more important than, I mean, he's just kind of reaching around.
We need
hoping
to join hands with Russia.
Right.
He put out a nice statement. He says, this morning I began my day by setting aside any doubt that I'm human. You know, which is...
That's a good thing to say.
It is. And he said at first that he thought, and you can kind of hear it, Aleppo might have been an acronym for something. You know, because they weren't talking about Syria or ISIS or foreign policy before Barnacle's question at all.
Yeah.
So he heard Aleppo. So I think he's saying he thought it might have been an acronym for, I don't know what.
For something else.
Yeah.
I had to look up what it meant. I'm sorry.
Well,
but I'm not running for office. And when you say Syria, that's what we hear.
You've heard, I'm sure you've heard it in the news over the last several years, right?
Not really at all.
Then I haven't been doing my job, Wendy, because you should have.
I should have. Maybe I tuned it out. I'm going to be completely honest here.
Well, but again, like you said, you're not running for president of the United States or hoping to.
Exactly.
So it would certainly be nice for you to be up on it, but it's not going to potentially cost you an election or anybody.
No,
you know,
you're absolutely right. But no, you say Syria. I know what you're talking about. Aleppo. I thought it was a, and then a word, Aleppo.
Oh,
I did. I'm serious. I am being 100% honest. I have not heard that word.
But here's the thing: is when you're running for president, and it's an almost impossible task, but you have to be up on pretty much everything.
I know.
Because when a moment like this happens, and Steve, I heard several people already, now this just happened a short time ago, earlier this morning, but I've already heard people say, oh, but this was one of those gotcha moments where they were get him. And it wasn't.
Absolutely not.
It wasn't. It was an honest question.
If you said it to me, like in crosstalk, I would say, what's Aleppo?
Yeah.
Right. But if you're in a presidential candidate sitting with, you know, probably one of the most influential morning programs in the country, you're prepared for something like that. Or you say you've got a secret plan for Aleppo.
Right. And leave it at that.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's also the way it played out, Steve, is Barnicle asked the question and then Gary Johnson isn't up on exactly what the question is referring to. Then you have Barnicle kind of schooling him. And that reads as then you go, okay, so there's a guy who wants to be the president, but he's kind of being taken to task by a reporter, even though I don't think he was trying to be mean. He just seemed so stunned that he, A, didn't know what it was, and B, just kind of just was going, I don't know, what is it?
I mean, as someone who heard it as it happened, it was stunning.
Yeah.
Can we hear it again?
Yeah, sure.
I just want to hear his reaction.
Sure.
It's going to take a second to get it ready.
Because he does it with a little sort of spryness. He goes, and what is Aleppo?
Right.
Yeah.
Because you know, he's a pretty...
That's one of the Marx brothers,
well,
right?
He's an alert guy. He's a smart guy. He's been a successful governor.
Yeah.
Yes. It's just not his...
Yes. That's where he should have known about it, right? No?
Oh, well...
Yes.
Without a doubt, yes.
Can we hear it again?
Yeah.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Okay.
Well, with regard to...
So, Steve, if you're Barnicle, do you even say the you're kidding part? Because is that too condescending, or is that just an automatic reaction?
I was, I wonder if he might take back the you're kidding part, but
yeah.
I think he thought he might have been kidding. And, you know, it's the context of the show, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Meet the Press. It's
a little more
informal than that.
Right.
Well, I felt bad I had to look it up, and there's a bunch of people texting saying they never heard it till today either.
Even if you're not, it's where the civil war in Syria is kind of at its peak.
I know it
right?
now.
So, but even if you don't know the specifics of who's on what side, or it's under criticism because of the type of bombs that are being used there. I mean, no bombs are humane, but these are incredibly inhumane bombs, so it's been under criticism for that. But even if you're not aware of that, I would think most people would either know what it was, or if you're him, you do the politician swim where you just kind of go, that's one of those issues that I'm not prepared to discuss right now, but I'm certainly forming an exploratory committee.
The secret plan.
You guys are the best.
I'm going to ask my generals to formulate it.
Right. But we've seen over the years, we've seen politicians do that when there's one of those things where they're like, I'm not 100% sure what the best way to play this is, so I'll give the standard answer of
we're looking at that.
And we hope to have an answer very soon.
You guys are smooth over everything. I'm way too honest, and that's my problem.
Yeah, but it's a big deal, Wendy. I mean, this is like saying, what are you going to do? Really, it's similar to saying, what are you going to do about Vladimir Putin?
Yes.
Who?
And who is Vladimir Putin?
Right.
I mean, it is.
You're kidding, right?
No, this is Barnicle's word, and it's being used a lot now, is the epicenter of the humanitarian crisis in the Middle East. It's ground zero.
Yeah.
And
well, I know that now.
Yeah.
I could have helped him. I could have texted him.
Texted him right then and there. Can you hold on a minute, Barnicle? I'm getting a text from Wendy. Hold on. Hold on. All right. We'll take a quick break and then your thoughts. If you're on hold, stay there. We will get to you in just a minute or two. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And no one's extremely happy about our candidates of choice for the presidential election. So Gary Johnson's in there with Bill Wells, which I would have gone with William Wells. It just
sounds
has a better
official.
Yeah. And just because the WW.
Oh, maybe.
And then this morning, if you didn't hear it, we played some audio. Can we play it again? I just kind of like the uncomfortability.
It is a little awkward. All right. So it's Mike Barnicle asking Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, a fair question. I know people have already said, like I said a little while ago, oh, he's trying to get him, threw out a gotcha question, but he did not. He asked him an honest question. Here was earlier today.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Okay.
This is like a bit on SNL, the way he even says, and what is Aleppo? Like, you're pulling the wool over my eyes.
I thought he was really, like, genuine about that. That's kind of what I like. I mean, it's bad, but it's kind of funny to me. He's just very genuinely like, well, what is Aleppo?
But all right, it's all those things, but it's so crucial for somebody running for president.
You think?
It's beyond crucial to be up on pretty much everything. And it, then you say, if you're a potential voter, then you say, okay, if he doesn't know that, what else doesn't he know?
Yeah, and I was telling you off the air, I really don't think I've ever heard that word. And I like to follow news. What we hear is Syria. I didn't know, you know, you have Bosnia-Herzegovina. I don't know that I knew about Herzegovina until there was a conflict going on there.
Right, but there's a conflict going on now in Aleppo. That's kind of the point.
I understand that, but we just hear Syria. That's all I'm hearing. Julie, have you heard of it prior to today?
No, Wendy. I wanted to say thank you. I listen to the news a lot. I know Syria, but I had never heard Aleppo, and I think my reaction while driving was, the same as his.
Julie,
can
I ask you a question? And I don't mean this to be condescending, but do you regularly read a newspaper?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's in the newspapers quite often.
And I think, you know, a lot of broadcast news, you know, might not get as specific, but it is definitely in print a lot.
I think I might look at the first line being Syria, and then just kind of gloss over cities' names.
Yeah, that's very possible.
But on the other hand, I'm not running for president.
That's the problem. Not that you're not running for president, although you would get some
problem,
support.
Yeah.
But the problem is,
we'd vote for you.
Is that a guy who is running for president isn't up
it's
on
a, given.
On
he
a major
know
story.
That.
He should know that.
All right, can we agree on that, Julie, that Gary Johnson should have been aware of that place in Syria?
Well, I would think so.
Well, thank you for being honest. I didn't know which way to go because everybody's going, I can't believe you didn't know what Aleppo was. And it's like, I didn't hear it before. I'm sorry.
There's stories that have been circulating for years now about Sarah Palin, about how after she was named as the vice presidential candidate, they had these cram sessions with her that were similar to like if you were studying for a final. And what they would do is she couldn't keep track of who our friends were in certain situations and who our enemies were. So there was almost like a flashcard type situation where they were trying to drill her over and over and over again on when you go to the debates and these topics come up.
You got
to
know this.
These are our friends. These are the bad guys. Good guys here, bad guys here. And it wasn't that easy for her, you know?
All right. Well, thank you, Julie, for calling. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
And I don't read the newspaper very much anymore, but I do read stuff online, which is also in print. And
sure.
Honestly, I have
not
seen
it
that.
Until today.
Mm-mm. Alec?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. Yep, I'm Alex. I'm calling from Rockford, Illinois here. I wanted to kind of give my opinion on the Gary Johnson Aleppo thing here.
Sure, go ahead.
Go
what
it.
Do you got, Alec?
Well, I start off, I am an avid supporter of Gary Johnson and, the Johnson Well ticket. And the whole thing with the everyone saying, oh, he's done is a big flaw. In the same breath, though, with politics, the important thing to understand is not every politician is going to know the exact thing on everything. They're going to surround themselves with people that can help fill in the blanks. So to say that it's a huge flaw, I mean, I'm not saying it's entirely passable, but in the same breath, though, I mean, to say this is going to be his big end, if this really ended it for you for the Johnson Well ticket, then I really don't think you're going to vote for him in the first place.
Well, see, now you're one of the guys I was talking about earlier, so
right.
you're with him. You're not going to go. Is there anything he could do that would chase you away from him?
I mean, if he started, spouting off like Trump or going back and forth on issues like Hillary, I mean, that would be a big end to me for the Johnson Well ticket. But as far as the party platform goes, I mean, I'm a big supporter of it. So,
right.
I mean,
so if he's
still the most rational, most sane voice in the election for me.
Yeah, they're both two smart guys. William Weld, too, is, you know,
very smart,
very accomplished.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you're saying if he's consistent in not knowing what Aleppo is, you'll be more comfortable with him?
Well, I mean, not knowing.
No, I'm kidding you. I'm kidding you. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But Alec, even if you give him a pass on what was said earlier, be honest. You got to be slightly disappointed, at least a little.
I mean, if it is, I mean, it's minimal. It's barely
not enough
minimal.
To budge you. Okay, that's fair.
No, not near.
That's all right.
That's a good point, Alec. Though, if you're in, you're in. You know, that's not going to ruin it for you. Thank you for calling, Alec. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wonder if there will be a tactic during the debates. You got the presidential debates coming up. If they're not saying to Hillary Clinton already, this is the kind of thing that we can use to bring Donald Trump down, because the criticism on him has been that there's going to be plenty of these things that he's not schooled on. So I wonder if they're already getting her ready to have those situations ready to throw out there just to see what his reaction is.
Donald better be borrowing Sarah's flashcards for the debate.
Steve, go
ahead. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. I watched that program last night, and it was interesting just structurally, because Hillary Clinton has a long, detailed record.
Yeah.
So for her segment, she was called on to defend all these past decisions. What about the email? What about Libya? What about Iraq vote? You know, so she, people are saying she was on the defensive. That's because they were asking her about her past.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't call him on those things. You can say, what do you think about this? And he can say, well, it's terrible and I'm going to fix it.
Right.
You know, it's just a different situation where the different candidates are. So I think he might do better in the debates than you think, Wendy.
Well, he's going to have answers like you and Bill both had. He's just going to smooth over
everything. Those generality.
Yes.
I borrowed from him last night because he said that's what he says about ISIS. He says, I have a plan, but I don't want to tell you what it is.
Yeah.
That's
his
genius.
Answer.
Evil genius, but genius nonetheless.
Still counts. All right, we got to take a break. News with Steve in just a moment, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I know we're all married. Kevin about to be married.
How many days, Kevin?
It's in two weeks from tomorrow, so that would be 15 days.
Oh, excellent.
You got to be quicker with that.
Well, now it's easy to figure out. The other day, not so much.
When it was 17 and 18, it was impossible. But now that it's 15, it's very easy.
Do you guys remember going on first dates? Because to me, very awkward.
Were they? You had a hard time on first date?
I didn't have a hard time. I'm just saying.
Why so awkward?
Because you talk about the same thing. It's like, oh, so what do you do? Oh, what do you like to watch on TV?
But here's the thing. Now, because everybody kind of knows each other online, I think all that is eliminated. I think you come into most first dates now, if people are meeting each other online, they almost already know the backstory.
That's true.
Right?
Because of all the dating sites and everything.
Yeah.
For me, the thing was, the hardest part always was asking a girl out. I mean, it just was, you know, because you had to do it on the phone.
Right.
Or in person.
Right.
And now it's like text.
Yeah.
How about it? Like, hey, what are you doing?
All the
later?
Pressure's off, you know?
Yeah, because if you get turned down, it's like big deal. You got turned down via text. You're not face to face.
Right.
You ask girls out on the phone? I thought that was something you should do face to face. I don't know. I don't remember what it was like in the olden days.
No, I mean,
days.
I remember like in high school dances, I'd call girls. I'm like, hey, you wouldn't want to go to the dance with me.
Is that how you phrased it?
Sort of. Yeah.
I kind of set that up for them. Hey, you're right.
I just want to make it easy.
Sure.
All right. Well, BuzzFeed has put together a list of things to ask on a first date instead of just sitting there on the date staring at your phone.
Right.
Which I bet happens.
Oh, I'm positive.
God, why even go out and see someone in person?
I just think a
relationship via text.
I think I told you this once before, but there was a girl that I was crazy about when I was in high school, and she went to a different school than me. I knew her because she worked at the bank that I went to.
And you had a lot of money.
Oh, boy. Yes, I sure did. So I asked her in the bank if I could call her, and she said that I could. And then I was so nervous, and this wasn't really like me, but she seemed very sophisticated to me. So I had like I had this thing with index cards where
a Rolodex?
I would say something to her, and if she said this, I could say this. But if she said this, I could say this.
Oh my
so
God.
It was almost like a playoff tree, you know, when you see like when a team gets into
yes.
the all right. So I
the
had
brackets kind of yeah. like you'd move up to a different
yeah. And
oh
my whole,
God.
I went upstairs to make this phone call, and the whole upstairs carpet was littered with these potential, well, what if she says this? Well, I better be ready with this.
You had a conversation flowchart.
Yeah, I had a conversation flowchart. Yeah.
Wow.
It worked. But, I mean, if I'm her, I'd go, are you reading this from a card?
What, did you go out with her?
Yeah, I went out a couple of times with her. And she was weird about me bringing the index cards on the date.
Was it hard when you got to the menu?
Yes.
If steak yes. joint A.
Oh, right. You are so cute.
If you want me to converse with you in Spanish, press 2.
How old were you?
34. I just learned to drive, so I think I was 16. I must have been 16. I just got my license. And that, I mean, it's weird because I didn't really know her. I just knew her from seeing her in the bank.
And that's different. It's not like asking somebody out at school. This was someone right. You don't even know where they're from, you know?
And you know what I had to do in the bank? Because she was in charge of home loans, so I had to go in and pretend that I was interested in a home loan.
At 16, 16, how old was she?
Like 17 or 18. I think she had just turned 18.
And you drew a little mustache on your lip, did you?
Yeah. Excuse me, I'm extremely worldly, and I would like a home loan, please.
Have you been to Lombard?
Wow, she's 18 and doing home loans.
Yeah, that's impressive, right? Yeah that was one of the many things.
Where is she now? We should track her down.
I think she's still there. I don't think she advanced. She peaked early, unfortunately.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
How was the date?
I went out with her several times. It was really good. It was just that first time because up until then, every girl I had ever asked out, I knew from school. That was the first time that I'm like,
stranger.
Oh, wow, it's an older woman, and she's already doing home loans at 18. This is good. Think of where this could go.
Did she wear a suit on your date?
Yeah, no.
Did it say LaSalle?
But she was weird about me stealing pens.
Did you ever tell her?
No. I thought it best not to.
Well, first dates are, they're awkward. I'm not saying they're hard, but, it's exciting, but it's like, you just don't know what to expect. So
right.
BuzzFeed has put together a bunch of questions that you can ask
will
really break the ice. For instance, if you didn't already know my name, what do I look like my name would be?
Oh, that's a good question. Boy, that's, for a first date, that's pretty...
I feel like that would put a sour tone on the date. That's a weird question.
Well, because maybe that shouldn't be your first one.
Is that because it's self-centered to some extent, Kevin? Why?
It's just a bizarre question.
It is a bizarre
question. It sets
question.
A bizarre tone, you know?
Yeah, but it's like, hi, my name's
She's
Wendy.
Now thinking, okay, now this guy's a weirdo.
People have different associations with names, too.
Yeah?
Like some people think of a Patty differently than
right.
other people.
Right.
But I think it's just an icebreaker. Like, you know, hey, my name's Wendy. What's your name? You'd say Bill. I'd be like, oh, man, you look like a Walt.
Oh, right. That's a compliment.
Yeah, to which I would say, okay, nice meeting you.
Right. Gotta go.
What do I look like my name would be?
This index card says I've got to go.
It is an interesting question, but I would almost, like, I would save that till date 4 or 5.
Yeah, but you're just learning her name. If you don't whip it out then, you don't get to.
Yeah, I guess so.
How about this? Did you ever go through a goth stage?
Well, that's a good... Again, that is a great question,
it
but
is.
It seems weird to ask that...
Well, just not right off the bat. I mean, you know...
Later in on the...
Yeah,
yeah,
just
I guess
as you're
so.
Discussing things.
I like that one. Yeah, that one's a little more
fan
fun.
Fan of that one?
Yeah.
I went through a shaved head, weird fingerless gloves, leggings, but it wasn't really goth. It was pre-goth.
But
it's like poser punk.
Right. But couldn't you pose it as something more like that, more all-encompassing, like saying, have there ever been any stages in your life?
Like a rebellious phase.
Say it that way. Or how many tattoos and piercings do you have? Is that too personal? I would ask that.
Yeah, because if they said any, you'd be out the door.
No.
My mom just called me.
I
have to go to the grocery store for her.
A couple would be fine, but if she looks... Like, you know, like an art palette. Then
why would you ask?
As in her ears?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's not even my right to know that initially on a first date, but I'd be curious.
Because ultimately she would see your tramp stamp.
Yes, I would show her that.
What does it say again?
It changes all the time.
I know, it really does.
It always changes depending on what we're talking about.
That's a good tattoo artist.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
All right, how about this? Again, something to break the ice on a first date. What's something you've always wanted to do but you've never done yet?
That's a great question.
Skydive would be your answer?
Mine would probably be go to Japan. But if somebody asked you that on a first date, your answer would be what?
I don't know. What is something I've always wanted to do but I've never done?
Wake up next to you, honey.
Oh, see? You should run for president.
Steve, that's beautiful.
He is smooth over everything.
That is beautiful.
I don't know.
Or you can even say, I'm doing that right now. I'm sitting across from you at a right. dinner table talking to you. This is exactly what I would want. You say something like that.
Keep in mind, Wendy, I'm sitting in a room by myself, not near any other people. So it's very different.
But that's not a real answer. That's a BS answer.
I think that's a good question and a good answer. I think.
No, going to Japan. And then you go, right. Oh, really? What's
Yeah, it's why a conversation starter. Right.
I don't really, I'd have to think about that.
But you have a couple filed away, don't you?
I've always wanted to be a lead singer in a rock band.
That's a good answer. Say that. That's good.
But it's never too late. I still might be someday.
Yeah.
In my basement.
Yeah.
All right. Would you rather bring back the phrase, this is stupid, Kevin will probably get into this. Would you rather bring back the phrase bling bling or what's the dealio?
No, that would be a deal breaker as well.
Don't ask that question.
All right, we have more. We'll take a break. Some great things to break the ice on a first date so you can get over the awkwardness and spark a conversation. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. It's Bill, it's Wendy, and we are talking about things to do on a first date, questions to ask that will kind of break the ice, not your typical, what do you do, where do you live, do you have a dog?
How soon till you get out? That's a good question. Is there a chance they'll commute your sentence? Like that kind of question.
I don't know if I should take that as you're insinuating I date bad boys.
Who said that?
Because girls like bad boys.
Who said that?
You had mentioned a really sweet little teenage Bill Left thing where you put together some, what did Kevin call it, conversational flow charts?
Yeah.
Before you asked a girl out, a stranger who worked at the bank.
Yeah, I just knew her from the bank.
Steve, you know about these little notes?
Hey, guys, yeah. George Costanza always had notes when he called to ask for a date. And one time it went so well that he was able to throw his notes out halfway through the conversation.
Oh, that's a good sign.
And then, so Jerry asked him, well, what were some of the things you had? And he said, how he was really good at going in reverse in his car. And there was a few other ones that I can't recall at the moment. But I have to admit that I may have done that once or twice myself.
Yeah, I don't know that it's all that unusual. And it really does. I mean, the obvious it does help. Yeah,
it helps.
All right, Steve, thank you for sharing that. So you were the precursor to George Costanza.
I guess
that tells us a lot.
Yeah, I guess so.
Don't wear sweatpants in public.
I won't.
All right, some things to break the ice. I have to ask this to you. All right, we're on our first date. Mm-hmm. We're sitting there.
Right.
It's only you left on Earth and one single animal. Which animal would you pick?
Wow. I would I guess it's just a hypothetical.
I would say a koala bear or a panda because they're cute.
Yeah. All right. I'll go with that too then.
What's one thing you love that most people think is weird?
Oh boy, the list would just go on and on and on, wouldn't it?
Really, that's the only question the girl would have to ask you and that you could
spend
the rest of the
day
talking about.
The whole night would be discussing that. That's a good question. I have too many to even start. But don't some of these, even though these are good questions, they almost fall into the bracket of we're out of important things to talk about. You know, like that first date, there's so many, especially the first date, there's so many important things you want to discuss with them, you know?
Like what? It's a lot of pressure for a first date.
I would want to know, like most of the first dates for me were always spent just finding out their backstory, like what got them to where they are now.
How do you approach that? So,
what's your backstory? What got you to where you are now? I come right out and
smooth.
Say it. I studied screenwriting. I want to know their history. I would just I would want to know everything that got. I mean, you can't do that all in one date, but isn't that part of the first date process? Is
I guess
not just here because you're pretty. I want to know what else you have behind you.
Well, it's what you treat it as a job interview. I guess technically it is.
It
kind
is
of
like a
an
job
interview.
It is.
Do I see myself having a second date with this person?
Right. Where do you see yourself with our company in 5 years? That's what I would ask.
If you could spend a summer traveling with one band, which would it be? I know what you would
pick.
That's
the Banana Splits. That's obvious.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Katrina and the Waves.
Oh, Katrina and the Waves, a close second.
Isn't that where why you got your gym shoes?
Yeah, because of the guys in Katrina and the Waves, yes.
What was the first CD you bought?
Again, these are all great questions, but I would almost feel if these questions were coming on a first date, I'd say to, like, if the girl was asking me these questions, I'd go, oh, no, she's already going to the more esoteric instead of the more important.
Well, no, because some of these...
But these are great questions. I would be reluctant to pull them out that early in a hopeful relationship. Wouldn't you, a little bit?
I don't know. I would like it to be like kind of loosey-goosey on the first date and see if...
serious beyond.
Yeah, because you're just supposed to have fun and, you know, hey, where are you from? Where'd you grow up? And then, you know, let me ask you something. What one thing would you tell your 15-year-old self? Oh, wow, that's hard. I would say I would have, you know what I would tell my 15-year-old self?
What?
In high school, be in band, be in theater, and be in the AV club. Knowing what I do now, that's what I wish I could have told myself then.
That is a great question. Yeah, I guess you
and
could ask that on our first date.
And it tells a little
about me. It does. I guess it does reveal enough.
And really important things, like, for instance, this one. What celebrity would you really want to smell?
To smell?
Date over.
Who would it be?
Who?
I said date over.
Oh, yeah. The date's over. Yeah. All right.
You had a bunch. Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, but that would get dangerous if I just started sniffing around Olivia Wilde. That would be dangerous.
Oh, this one I'm scared to ask you.
You can ask. I'll be honest.
No, I have a better one.
All right.
This is perfect for you, and this is a girl asking you this.
All right.
If you had to spend a day without your phone, what would you do?
Love every minute of it.
Oh, really?
Enjoy it.
Huh. Are you on Tinder?
That's why I don't think I'd survive well
no.
in today's dating world, because I don't play the phone game, and I think that would ruin me.
But that would explain what you're all about.
Yeah, I guess so.
I would then know if I texted you and you didn't text me back, not to take it personally,
right?
Because you put your phone down the minute you walk in the house.
Yeah.
What would the title of your memoir be?
The Bill F. Story. Is that taken? Does somebody already have that one?
No.
Pandemonium, with a picture of a bunch of pandas on the cover.
God.
You wouldn't read that book? You'd go, oh, look, there's a story about a guy I work with, and there's pandas. I bet they solve crimes.
Who's on your workout playlist? What kind of songs do you listen to when you work out? That is a great question to determine your interests.
That is a great question. I defer
Enya?
To... it would be Enya. Why is that funny?
And those
monks. Remember those monks?
The chanting monks.
The chanting monks.
Yeah. Bring them the next date, please.
I work out with them. All right. I like these. I worry about somebody that would need these on a first date. I think these are better down the line. Don't you think a little bit?
Well, check it out on BuzzFeed. If you need some information or some help on a first date, maybe a third date you're thinking?
Yeah, third or fourth, yeah.
35 things to ask on a first date instead of staring at your phone.
Yeah.
Over on BuzzFeed. Hey, you know who's coming up after the news? My son Michael turned me on to this guy. Adam Ruins Everything is the name of his podcast, YouTube videos, and it's kind of like a myth buster in a real interesting way. He's coming to the Park West, and we are going to talk to Adam of Adam Ruins Everything after the news. Take a quick break, and then news time with Steve Bertrand, 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN, and every once in a while my kids will turn me on to something that makes me feel hipper, because I'm an old lady.
Yes.
You're the same age as I am.
Younger.
So.
A year younger.
6 months younger.
Round it off.
My 17-year-old son, Michael, is a big fan of the website College Humor. There's a YouTube channel, and he goes, you got to check out this guy, Adam Conover. He does this Adam Ruins Everything. He also has a show on True TV, and Adam is on the line with us to ruin everything right now. Hi, Adam.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, guys. It's a thrill to be here.
If I'm trying to explain Adam Ruins Everything, it's kind of like a hip, funny take on, like, Mythbusters. Like, you take things, for example, our producer Kevin Richter is getting married in how many days, Kevin?
15, because I can do the math.
I learned that the first wedding dresses weren't really white. That's just something that happened from what queen?
From Queen Elizabeth. What happened was wedding dresses, like for most of American European history, people just sort of wore whatever dresses they had, right? White wedding dresses. We think that we have this idea that it's an ancient symbol of purity, right? And that's a very, very old tradition. But it was actually the queen who wore the first white wedding dress, and the reason she did was because white was a symbol of wealth, because at that time, bleach didn't really exist yet. You couldn't really clean clothes that well. And so if you could wear a white dress, that would be a dress that you would only wear once, right? Mm-hmm. A white dress implied, well, you're going to wear it once and throw it out. So only rich people could wear them, so that was why she was doing it, right? But because she was the queen, it, set a trend, and everybody else wanted to get married like the queen, too. And so it became a trend among the wealthy that gradually percolated down through everybody else. And so now we're basically aping this this old, this royal style from only, a couple hundred years ago. What our segment goes on to talk about is how pretty much all wedding traditions are derived from a display of wealth like that. So many of the things that we think of as you have to, this is the wardrobe for grooms, the fact that the bridesmaids all dress the same, stuff like that. Those were all put into place by bridal magazines in the early part of the 20th century that were trying to encourage middle-class families who previously would just sort of, get married in a barn or whatever in your normal work clothes, to get married like the wealthy, to ape the traditions of the wealthy. And that's why now, when you go to a wedding, you sort of get the sense that everybody is, suddenly being fancy for a day.
That is what it's like. And they're wasting all their money on a down payment on a house on the wedding.
Sure.
Exactly. And that was sort of a creation of the wedding industry over the course of, decades and decades, starting in the first half of the 20th century. Basically, the real irony is that all this started during the Great Depression, when Americans were at their poorest, when bridal magazines were pushing people to, buy fancy silverware. And the gift tradition, by the way, is totally the idea that there's a rule that you have to, get a gift, and that you have, hey, if you don't get it in time, don't worry, you have up to a year, but if you don't buy a gift, people will be mad. That's entirely a creation of bridal magazines and the wedding industry. There's no other basis for that tradition other than the people who want you to buy the gift telling you that you should.
Adam, we could take it even a step further with the engagement ring. There's that rule about how many months' salary you should spend on an engagement ring. I tend to think it was jewelers that came up with that formula, isn't it?
Oh, man, you have just you have set me up perfectly. I don't know if you realize that. Yes, in fact, this is sort of our most famous segment we've done on the show. The most shocking fact, and this is still my favorite one out of all of them, the diamond engagement ring we think of as this ancient tradition of love, right? And it was actually created by the De Beers Diamond Cartel in the 1930s. They were trying to sell more diamonds, but people weren't buying that many. And so they said, we should create this idea that a man should buy a woman a diamond ring for her engagement. No one had done it before. They started putting it in movies, in magazines. They paid celebrities to do it. They ran a massive ad campaign saying, basically, buying an expensive ring is the best way to show your beloved that you're a real man and that you're a man of worth. And they literally just made up the 2 or 3 month thing. They were like, 2 months? Nah, let's do 3 months. 3 months is better for us. 3 months salary it sounds like a pretty good amount for De Beers. And they did it so thoroughly that now that's just a part of our wedding tradition, right? It was a straight-up marketing campaign, but now it's so embedded in American wedding tradition that you can't get out of it, If I were to propose to my girlfriend today, I would probably have to get her some kind of ring. And that's what's really remarkable. And it happened less than 100 years ago, and we totally forgot about it. The ad campaign's over, right? They stopped running the ads decades ago, but we're still buying the rings because it's buried deep within our culture now. It's really remarkable. We often think that ads don't have power on us, but they really do.
All right, speaking of ads, and I saw this one, everyone tells me to drink more water. You have to drink at least 8 glasses of water a day, and I was relieved to find out that that is not really true. I can actually overhydrate myself.
Yes. Well, yeah, first of all, the one about 8 glasses of water a day, that's one of those facts that has never been proven by anyone. And in fact, no one even knows where that 8 glasses came from. You know, that's just like this sort of line that people repeat to each other. Similar to the way people say, oh, you only use 10% of your brain. That's not true. Right. And no one knows who was the first person who said that. It's like this sort of urban myth, right? So that's what 8 glasses of water a day is. The fact is, and we talked to a lot of hydration scientists, you know, exercise scientists, when we were producing this segment of the show, there is no recommended amount that a single person must drink, right? Because everyone's body is very, very different. If you just think about the size of, you know, some people weigh, you know, 120 pounds, some people weigh 300. Those people would have to drink different amounts, right? So you might say, is there some amount, like, per pound that I should drink or, you know, depending on my exercise? And the fact is, it's very hard to give people numbers that tell them how much to drink. But, hey, good news. We have a very sensitive measure of how much water you need to drink, and it's right there in your body. It's called being thirsty.
And that's when you drink water. That's the only time you need it?
Basically, I mean, we had a, you know, we spoke with an exercise scientist, Dr. Tamara Hugh Butler, and she said that, yes, thirst is your body letting you know that you need to drink water. And your thirst, your measure of thirst is very sensitive. Like, you know, you'll feel thirsty very quickly if you need water. And it's also a very powerful, you know, sense. You're not going to, if you have free access to water, you're not going to not drink it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're going to get thirsty. It's like, it's, you know, it's pretty close to breathing, you know. Now, there are exceptions to that, right? Like, if you're in a very, very hot or dry climate, you know, probably people who live in Phoenix might need to be a little bit more careful than the rest of us, right? If you're running a marathon, you probably want to be careful about your water intake. But the problem is that, like, this overemphasis on hydration, right? People treat hydration as though it's this, you know, dire thing that you need to constantly be drinking water. Watch out. Make sure you're drinking, right? Now, for a normal person, if you drink too much water, you'll just pee, right? You're just going to pee a lot, and that's not such a big deal, right? The problem is when you exercise a lot, if you're doing strenuous exercise, your body goes into water conservation mode and it stops peeing, basically. And the water stays in your body, right? And so what ends up happening is you drink too much water, you can develop a condition known as hypernatremia, where basically, technically it's what it is the sodium content in your blood gets kind of low. And that can be, you know, as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than dehydration. And there have actually been a number of cases where people who drank too much water suffered ill effects. I think we have something like 12 marathon runners have died of hypernatremia.
But it's very rare. It's very rare. There was also a radio promotion. Do you remember,
about
like
5 or 10 years ago?
Drink water to win a new Wii or something. And the woman who participated died.
Overhydrated herself and died. Yeah,
yes.
Awful.
Yes. Now, yes, and it is. And there was also a case a number of years ago. I forget how. Only a few years ago, where a high school student died during football practice after he drank 2 gallons of water and 2 gallons of sports drink. And I don't think he was doing a contest or anything. I think he was, you know, just really, really overhydrating.
Yeah.
Right? Now those are extreme cases, right? You're not, the average person doesn't need to worry about hyponatremia. The only people who need to worry about it are, you know, people who are doing a lot of exercise and, you know, and drinking water. If you're a marathon runner, you can overdo it, and you want to make sure you don't overdo it, right? But the main point is, and what our show tries to do, is there are these bits of common wisdom that we carry around with us in life, like you need to be drinking water constantly, and our show tries to puncture them and tries to, say, hey, guys, wake up. We don't have to do things this way. This information isn't actually coming from anywhere. And so that's the same thing with hydration. It's like this thing that we're too worried about. Really, just drink when you're thirsty, and you're going to be fine.
Adam Conover on the line with us. He's known from Adam Ruins Everything. It's on True TV. You are coming to town. We're going to take a quick break. And just to stress this, you have said before you vote, go to see this show. You're going to be at the Park West on October 3rd. Adam Conover of Adam Ruins Everything. We'll continue talking to him after this. It's 720 WGN. All right. We are in the midst of talking to Adam Conover. Adam Ruins Everything. You can see him on True TV. You have podcasts, YouTube channels. You can see him everywhere. And you're going to be at the Park West right here in Chicago, a great venue, October 3rd. And it says on your website, by the way, adamconover.net, before you vote, go see this show. Talk to us.
Well, the show that we're doing is we're going on a big tour. We're going to 15 cities. Chicago is the last city on the tour, so the show will be real nice and polished by the time we get there. I'm really excited for it. And we're doing an hour of material about the election and about our crazy political process. And what we're doing is, you know, there's a lot of people on TV right now who talk about, who are doing, you know, current event satire at a very high level, you know, Trevor Noah and Sam B and all those people. We wanted to do something a little bit different. So with this show, we're going to be looking at the election from a historical perspective. Because here's the thing. Everybody right now is always saying, you know, oh God, this is the craziest election of all time. It's nuts that, you know, both the candidates are insane. I hate all the choices. Our election is, you know, our political system is broken. It's worse than it's ever been. You know, there's this sort of mass cynicism and hysteria about it. And we wanted to look at the elections of the past and say, you know, is it really the craziest election of all time? Or are there, you know, are there some stories buried in America's history of elections that were a lot weirder than this one? And let me tell you, there definitely were. I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, people say that, you know, for instance, you know, Donald Trump is like, you know, sort of the nastiest, rudest, you know, meanest political candidate that we've seen so far. But you should have seen the things that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams wrote about each other in the press when they were running against each other. It was, you know, we sort of have this idea of the Founding Fathers as being these like titans of etiquette who were, you know, very genteel men. But, you know, when those two ran against each other, they hated each other. And they wrote some incredibly, like, you know, Marco Rubio saying Donald Trump has small hands has nothing on what those guys were saying. I'm serious. I don't want to read you the quotes because, honestly, I genuinely think the quotes are unprintable, or sorry, unbroadcastable for radio. That's how rude they were. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're also going to be talking about some you know, issues in our election system that we don't acknowledge how messed up they are. Right?
There's like some, the Electoral College.
The Electoral College is one that we did on our TV show, and we talked about how the Electoral College makes our votes very unequal, and how some people in some states, their votes are actually worth more compared to people's votes in other states. That we're doing some issues along those lines. We're going to be talking about how money in politics is a obviously that's an issue that everyone is really worried about, you know, everyone says, oh my God, there's too much money in politics. But the problem with money in politics isn't what you think it is. It isn't that the elections are being bought and sold by millionaires. It's something a lot more pernicious. And again, I don't want to spoil it. You got to come to the show to see what it is.
And is this an all ages show? It's Monday, October 3rd, 8 p.m. at the Park West. Is this all ages? Can younger people go before they vote in their first election?
You know what? I hope that they can. I don't know offhand.
It doesn't say 21 and over, so I will look into that and we'll let people know.
Yeah, I very much hope that folks can come because one of the things I love the most about doing our show is that a lot of teenagers and even kids have really come to like it. And have, you know, people have told me, oh, my 9-year-old loves your show, which we didn't anticipate. We thought, you know, we're doing a show that's on at 10 p.m. We thought it, you know, would mostly appeal to grown-ups. But kids, it turns out kids really love finding out that everything adults say is wrong.
Yeah, sure.
It gives them some ammunition, you know. and so I really love that because, you know, our show is all about critical thinking and, you know, skepticism and questioning received wisdom, right? That's the theme of our show. I love the idea that we're able to impress that upon kids and get kids in that habit.
It gets them thinking. You know, my teenage boys turned me on to you, Adam. I'll be honest with you. So you can go to adamconover.net. That's your website. .com already taken by someone?
I believe it's a computer scientist in Indiana. My mistake. I've been on the internet for 20 years, and for some reason, I forgot to register my own dang name.
Yeah, that's all right.
But I mean, .net. That's a little cooler, I think. That's sort of a cooler indie, you know, URL.
Sure.
It's more unique.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, thank you for being with us, and we'll find out about the Park West show because I would like to take my sons to see you. Park West, Monday,
please.
October 3rd, 8 p.m. Adam Conover. Adam ruins everything. So nice to talk to you.
Nice talk to you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Take care, Adam. Sounds like a good show. That would be a fun show to see.
It makes kids think. That's what I like.
It makes kids think.
When my kids like learn something and then share it with me.
Right. That's
a
positive.
Know that.
It's good for everybody. We'll take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Huff and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to dial in, we're at 312-981-7200. We're joined by Patrick McDonald. Patrick is the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, also the chief guide over at Chicago Film Tour. You want to go to ChicagoFilmTour.com to get all the information. You were just telling us that there seems to be a lot of British people taking the tour lately. That's a very nice thing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Wendy portraying the role of a British person.
That's what they say
to make you feel comfortable
when they came on the tour. We do a lot of social media with all the travel places, all the big cities overseas. When you find out that Australians love the Blues Brothers, you're going to get with the
who doesn't except Bill.
I don't love the Blues Brothers, Patrick.
I still have to take that tour.
I'm telling you that when you see it frame by frame, you appreciate the artistry.
Now, Blues Brothers 2000, on the other hand, one of the greatest movies of all time.
There
you John go. Goodman?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
That's a film right there. That's a perfect
Magic
film.
Magic Mac, yeah.
When Brits come over, is it the Blues Brothers that they're... Now, you mentioned Australians like the Blues Brothers.
Right. But I think for British people, it's more of the city itself. You know, they want to see... Everybody loves the films that were shot in Chicago, your Ferris Bueller's, your Blues Brothers, your Dark Knights, that sort of thing. And they just want to see the city through that perspective, basically. You know, it's been good word of mouth with the Brits because I get a ton of them, at least one a weekend, if not
that's good.
More. So.
That's good. Have you in turn, or would you, if you were over in the UK,
yes.
I would imagine that would be a fun tour because there have been a bunch of great movies shot in England. Would you take a tour like that?
Well, unfortunately, I cannot take a tour ever again.
You're not allowed to? Why?
It's not that I'm not allowed to. It's just after doing it. No. Probably.
Yeah.
But after doing it for so long, I just the idea of sitting and listening to somebody else do it is kind of torturous.
Can I tell you something I noticed? Because I see a lot of movies, and I notice every movie I've ever seen, without a single exception, if the movie takes place in San Francisco... At some point, they show you the Golden Gate Bridge. That's just a given. If the movie's in San Francisco, there will be a scene somewhere in the movie with the Golden Gate Bridge or maybe in the background. I don't think we have a version of that in Chicago, do we?
That's an interesting question. I think the Beans becoming a popular B-roll deal, you know, just doing Millennium Park.
What about the Sears Tower?
The skyline is our...
That's our claim to fame.
Is our Golden Gate Bridge.
Not Trump Tower?
No,
nearly destroyed in Transformers 3. So I had a new joke this summer. It was great.
You don't want to ruin it here, though.
No,
don't
ruin
take
it.
The tour.
Take the tour. All right. Tom Hanks has a new movie out.
Yes,
I love him.
Sully.
Sully. Yes.
Before we talk about the movie,
right?
Have you ever interviewed Tom Hanks?
I have not.
He's one of the nicest guys. Like, you would hope that Tom Hanks is one of the nicest guys in the world. And when you sit down and talk to him, he proves that he is one of the nicest guys in the world.
I think it's his roots. He's working class Oakland, for gosh sakes. He came from there, you know, and he's totally self-made. I think when you do that, you kind of remember where you came from and you kind of, you know, he was on a documentary about the Oakland A's and the Oakland Raiders. They did something for HBO.
Yeah.
And he was so sincere and so interesting about that part of his life. And I'm sure it still goes on, but it just, you know, that he's just a regular dude.
The
basically.
Coolest
just
thing
like
is,
you, Bill.
It's, yeah, he's similar to me. Just like, I would call his story one of the more unlikely film stories in that he was doing episodic television, Bosom Buddies most notably, but a couple of other things. He was on Family Ties for a while. He was Uncle Ned, the alcoholic brother of Meredith Baxter. So you saw a guy just doing pretty much sitcom work, and nobody would have pegged him to be one of our greatest dramatic actors. He can do comedy well enough, too, but a great dramatic actor, a two-time Academy Award winner, one of those guys that every time he's in a movie, you know you're going to get quality work. It's such an unlikely story, and you got to be so happy for him.
Yeah. Again, I think Ron Howard, you know, it's sort of serendipity because Ron Howard remembered him from Happy Days and saw his progression with Bosom Buddies and Family Ties and puts him in Splash.
Yeah.
And that's what launched him. So,
I don't know. He's great. Everything he's in.
Yeah. I always enjoy
him. I keep thinking of Castaway. What a great movie that is. I want to rewatch that.
And that's part of the meme that's been going on about do not travel with Tom Hanks because...
In so many movies, if he takes a car ride or a boat ride or gets on a bicycle or a skateboard,
shot into space,
oh yeah,
something happens that ruins his journey.
Yes.
Right?
He never just gets travel buddy.
No, never gets from point A to point B cleanly. Ever.
Captain Phillips with the boat.
Yeah, it's so true.
Sully with a plane, Castaway with a plane.
Now, we've discussed this before. When you make a movie like Sully, where it that just happened a couple of years ago,
right.
The Sully Sullenberger story.
2009, interestingly enough, 8 years ago. But
so sometimes we're a little close to the story, and it's harder to pull it off as opposed to something that happened, you know, a century or two ago. How do they do with Sully?
Well, this is an interesting point. When you see disasters now on screen, they are so realistic that you can feel it. Everybody's flown, so you're seeing these people brace for the impact, and you're seeing the plane go into the river, and it's so realistic that, you know, it kind of throws you off, I think. And the same with Castaway when he went down with that FedEx plane.
Yeah.
It was so realistic that you're like, not going to fly. And they're not going to show that on the airlines. So
no.
There's a several.
No, they're too busy showing Alive. That was one of the scariest plane crashes.
That
crash.
Was
yes.
Wild. Yeah. That was wild. I know what you're saying. And remember that cheap book that they had in the
70s? Yeah. Survive was the book. Alive was the movie, right? Yeah.
Right. Well, they actually made two film versions of it. They made one in the 70s, which was called Survive.
Oh, did
they?
They
couldn't use the word Alive, but the second one was based directly on the book.
Yeah.
And that was the one with that plane wreck was just unbelievable.
That you really felt like you were going down with the plane.
Yeah.
Always fun.
The Denzel Washington movie from about 3 years ago, was it called?
Flight. Yes.
That also was extremely
real. I didn't
see that. Oh, boy.
Interesting film.
Yeah.
I'll get into the critique of Sully, but some of it was like Flight without the alcoholism or something like that. But Flight, what was interesting about that is, again, the plane crash, the way it went down, it was so realistic. Ugh. You know, it's just like, you know, that's everybody's worst nightmare.
It is. So in a weird way, I don't necessarily enjoy watching movies that have it,
right.
But I can kind of relate to it.
Sure. Sure, we can relate to it. That's the thing. We've lived this kind of thing. So when we see it depicted on screen, we're just like, whoa.
It's just like I imagined. It sucks.
I know. It's terrible.
But isn't the key when you're making a movie that features a major crash like that is you know that's going to be the scene everybody talks about. But the key is making the rest of the movie enjoyable as well.
And that's what Sully
enjoyable
does
is not
best.
The right word.
Sully
does,
does best. I kind of think that Clint Eastwood, who is the director, learned a lot from American Sniper in the fact that he created an American hero in American Sniper that wasn't necessarily the truth, I think.
Yeah.
There were some heightened scenes in that which made it, you know, for dramatic purposes. This, he didn't have to take any liberties.
Right.
This was the truth. And a lot of things happened after that flight that nobody really knows about.
Right.
The fact that the two guys who were involved in it couldn't sleep for 5 days.
Yeah.
They didn't have a scratch on them. Nobody had a scratch on them.
That's amazing.
It was a total miracle. And to see it play out, because, you know, you have the airline who wants to know exactly what happened. Could their, you know, millions of dollars of plane wreckage been avoided?
Yeah.
That was a big thing. And you don't think about that. And you don't think about the celebrity that the guy went through.
Is he in the movie at all? Does he have a cameo?
No, it's Hanks all the way. with the white hair.
It would have been nice to have Sully Sullenberger like walk by or be a passenger somewhere. On the plane.
They do that a lot of times.
It may have happened.
I didn't notice it,
but
I'll look for the meme.
Patrick McDonald is here. He's the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's the chief guide over at ChicagoFilmTour.com. They now let Americans in. For a long time,
That's
they were
right.
only letting British customers, but now it's Americans as well. Stick around if you have any questions or thoughts. 981-7200 is your call. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Patrick McDonald is here, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. We're talking about the movie Sully, which opens tomorrow.
Opens tomorrow, yes.
Yeah. Sir. It looks really good. Clint Eastwood, the director, it's based on his story. It's Chesley Sullenberger, correct?
Chesley
Is that his
Sullenberger,
real name?
Very good.
He wrote the original
the book
story.
It's based on, yes. Jeffrey Zaslow was the co-author
All That
on
Zazz.
That. All That Zazz.
Who
I got
believe
Zazz
from
hands.
Chicago. He's no longer with us, right? Is he gone?
I thought he did pass away.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's gone. I'm almost positive.
I will look that up.
Yeah. You know who I want to mention is in this movie, and I think he's one of our more underrated and underappreciated actors, is Aaron Eckhart. I've never seen him in anything where I don't kind of go, wow, he's really playing the everyman role, and he's such a chiseled, good-looking guy.
Yes.
It's hard to pull that off sometimes, but he does.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. He is a great character actor for being a really, you know, I wouldn't kick him out of bed for... crackers.
Right.
He's a nice, I don't know why I said that. I think that's the old Mick Jagger line.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yes, Jeffrey Zaslow died at 53 in a car accident.
God, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I still love him.
Yeah, I forgot about that. 2012, February 10th, 2012.
Well, okay. But he did co-author the book with Sullenberger.
Yes.
What I am impressed with it too is the structure of the screenplay, which was by Todd Karmanicki, easy for me to say, but he the way he structured the story makes it such a great American tale. I thought, you know, all that America is about fame and the blowback from fame sometimes, you know, and I think that the story is structured in such a way that it does it so well.
Yeah.
You know, 4.5 out of 5 for this. I was so impressed. From a mainstream movie with Tom Hanks to do something where we're actually thinking about, you know, what the implications are for a circumstance like this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the few movies I've seen where the audience burst into a spontaneous applause at one of the lines in the movie. I won't give it away, but you know, geez, you know, I think people are really looking for something like this. They are desperate for something like this.
Have you ever seen a movie, Wendy? I've been in a theater several times when this has happened, when either a line or a lot of times at the end of a movie, an audience will applaud and you say to yourself, that really says something, because it's not like in theater where the actors can respond or realize that you appreciate their work. It's a movie,
right.
But I always like to see that.
I do too. It's
It went
sorry.
Away for a while. The kids still do it
every once in a while.
Yeah,
yeah.
In this cynical world, it's nice to see some people applauding at, you know, 24 frames a second.
Yeah, 4.5.
Four and a half out of five.
That's a pretty
for
good
Sully,
rating.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Are there other major movies coming out this weekend?
Just,
I don't know.
Just one more, an independent film that's notable. It's called The Complete, well, not The Complete Unknown, but just Complete Unknown. Rachel Weisz, who's been everywhere lately, plays a woman who takes on multiple identities over her lifetime. She is obsessed with not being herself, being somebody else. But the rub is here, Chicago's own Michael Shannon is one of her ex-boyfriends. And at a crucial stage in his life, she walks back in after 15 years. And it's just an interesting movie about identity. Identity.
Complete Unknown, that's called.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things I walked out and said, can you do that today? In this day of Homeland Security and the way our documents are set up, you know, with the reflective seals on them and such, can you make a bunch of fake IDs now? I guess you still can if you know the right people.
Ask the teenagers. They'd be able to stay in the right place.
All right, I will.
So she's assuming she's assuming other identities by her. She wants to do that. It's not a mental deficit she has.
No, this is part of her adventure of life. I mean, a lot of people, you know, we assume different identities in our lifetime, but we all always remain to our core identity right. as, you know, here's our birth name and here's how we, you know, manifested ourselves through that birth name in our life. And we might have different occupations, but rarely does somebody cut up all their IDs
right.
and say, okay, get another set of papers and then suddenly become somebody else. And this was what The Complete Unknown is about.
One of my favorite TV shows of all time is The Fugitive, the TV version with David Janssen. And I think to myself, I don't know that that would play today just for obvious reasons, just
right.
because of technology being what it is. You can't just show up in a new town every week and start over. It'd be impossible.
Well, that was Catch Me If You Can. That was the one of the themes in that as well with Leonardo DiCaprio.
But even that took place years and years ago.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
Modern day.
Same era.
It would be
now
almost impossible.
You couldn't do it. You couldn't throw around bad paper like that.
I don't think so.
You'd be caught in a week.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, really quickly, we don't have a whole lot of time, but the summer coming to a close.
Yes.
What would you say were the big box office winners and the box office losers over the past three or so months?
Interestingly enough, it was a religious film that was the biggest bomb, the Ben-Hur remake.
Yeah, that just died a fast death, didn't it?
Why is that? I just think the timing was wrong. It's not really a summer movie.
Yeah.
I would put that out around Easter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in kind of that dead zone. But again, I don't think the interest was there. I mean, when somebody says, hey, well, you want to see another remake of Ben-Hur? Not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm satisfied with my viewing of Heston every Easter. I don't really need another one.
Right.
And I think it was just a miscalculation. And they spent a lot of money on it.
Was it good?
I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see it.
I don't think anybody saw it.
I did see the big BFG, which we talked about earlier in the summer. And that was the second biggest loss.
Big Friendly Giant,
big
is that?
Big Friendly Giant, yes.
I thought it was something different.
Well, we talked about that, too.
And but, such a great book, such a classic book, and it looked so good. It's too bad.
It was fine. You know, what appeals to kids is a mystery.
Right.
Or
right.
what appeals to the adults who are bringing kids to the movies.
And the two winners, give me two or three of the biggest winners
for
the summer.
Quickly, Finding Dory and The Secret Life of Pets.
Yeah.
Two animated films, and Captain America Civil War, of course.
That's what
did
the best.
You'll be happy to know that Kevin Hart had a big hit this summer.
Oh, that's good.
Central Intelligence with The Rock.
Yep.
You'll come around.
Yep.
Probably. Right now you're a broken heart, but
that's
Christine,
it.
You'll
I
come
think
around.
He's box office man.
Yes, he is.
That
he's
makes
box office.
Bill madder by the minute.
No, I don't understand it. I just don't get it. Patrick McDonald is the chief guide over at ChicagoFilmTour.com. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com for all your ticket information, and then he's also film critic for HollywoodChicago.com.
10:30 birthdays, Saturdays and Sunday this weekend. 312-593-4455. Thank you.
Well done. We'll take a quick break. He got it all in.
Good for him.
We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Winchester Business Lunch in just a little bit. It's Phil and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our show, the Thursday edition of Bill and Wendy. Thrilled that you're here. Call us, dial us, do whatever you want to reach us at 312-981-7200.
We want to be here, too.
Yes, we do.
We had an option of not being here, but we want to... We want to be on the air.
The company is taking a boat trip today, and they said to us, we'll give you the second half off, and you can come on the boat with us. And we said, no, we love the listeners, and it wouldn't be fair to them.
You know what happens on a three-hour tour, don't you?
Yep.
That's why you opted not to go. Me too.
Three-hour tour. You're not going either.
No, I'm not.
Oh, are you filling in for Bertrand?
No, Ryan is, because Bertrand's on the way to board.
Oh, he's going on the boat?
Yep, he's dressed like Mr. Howell from Gilligan's Island.
Hello, lovey.
Yeah.
I'll be calling everybody that.
Kim, somebody upstairs, and I don't know who it was, but somebody made comparisons to this, the WGN boat trip, to that of the Eastland disaster.
Oh,
and
I thought you were going to say Titanic.
No. Well, the Eastland was like our Titanic.
Right, exactly.
But that's a bad omen for somebody
that's
to
not
be.
Good.
Who said that?
I don't remember who it was, but I know somebody upstairs.
Could be a little rocky. There were storms.
Yeah. Maybe.
I'll tell you, the weather has been pretty perfect and sunny and hot,
yeah.
and today, not a very good day.
No,
to
but
go.
It's really clearing up.
It looks nice
out. Yeah, it does now.
I think
it's going to be great.
Yeah, I wouldn't be, if we were going to be on the boat, this would be a great day to be on the boat, but we're not.
We were an afterthought, that's why I'm not on the boat.
I don't think we were an afterthought. They just realized it came right in the middle of our shift.
That's
what
I'm saying.
Well, maybe they scheduled it that way.
It was intentional.
Well, that's how it is for us news people up here, too. You know,
yeah.
We can't just take off.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
All right. Can we talk music for a minute?
Anytime.
Because do you read GQ magazine? It looks like you don't.
Obviously, I do. Wow. Kevin, write down the time, just the time that that was said. I'll get to that later.
You don't read it. Gentleman's Quarterly.
You know, every once in a while, if it's in a waiting room, I'll page through it and I'll go, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. I don't get that.
Right. You don't like what you see, do you?
Nah, it's too dressy.
You still subscribe to Highlights?
Yeah, I get Highlights.
Good to know. All right. Well, GQ Magazine.
Is that how you pronounce it? GQ? I've been saying it wrong.
What have you been saying? Why don't you go on the boat?
All right.
They found the worst rock song of all time.
Oh, this will be good. What is the worst rock song of all time?
Yes.
Yeah.
And before we reveal it,
yeah,
the magazine gathered insight from some of the co-writers of the song, the producers, some of the band members and fellow musicians, all of whom have their own take on this particular song.
Wow.
And this is where I have a problem, because I really like this
you
song.
You like the worst rock song of all time.
Yes.
All right.
And I, what, Kevin?
I was just going to say, what does that say about you?
Listen,
they'll take your license away. The FCC will come in here and snatch up your license.
I have one.
Because
in the old days, you had to take
to operate the board in the old days.
Yeah,
you had
to take
have
transmitter
license.
Readings.
Right.
And then when you get to various other stations, you have engineers that handle that.
Now the little squirrel do it.
There's usually a squirrel running around to get the generator and going.
He has a name, you know.
Right. I shouldn't just say a squirrel.
Who is it?
Zeke is the squirrel here at WGN, but every station has their own squirrel.
We snatched him from BBM. He'd been there for years.
He came over in the Grzanich deal.
Me and Zeke go way back.
Right, right.
We told time together.
Right, right.
WGN News Time, almost 1:13. I really like this song.
Oh.
I know it's kind of hokey, but it's, I don't know that I like it in a sense of lyrics or musicianship.
What do you like about it?
It's catchy, and I like to sing along with it.
All right. Reveal, what is the song? This is the worst rock song of all time, according to GQ Magazine.
Or as you call the magazine? Okay, hit the song. Oh, I love this song. The electronic drums.
Yep.
It's worse than I ever remembered.
Bow, bow. I love this song. Come on, you're going to sing it when the chorus kicks in.
I don't love it, but I wouldn't say that this is the worst rock song of all time. That says a lot. There have been millions of songs. This isn't the worst.
I know. I really am bothered by it. The executive producer of the song, Dennis Lambert, had this to say about that song. Singer Grace Slick was the matriarch of the group, and everyone was focused on making her happy.
Do you know who wrote that, by the way? I think Bernie Taupin wrote this,
didn't he?
Uh-huh. He's Elton John's collaborator normally.
And Peter Wolfe. From the J. Giles
of
Band
the J.
and
G-
solo
yeah?
fame, yes.
Oh, he also wrote that? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so he's saying Grace Slick was the matriarch. Everyone was focused on making her happy. She gave me very specific marching orders. I want to make hits. She told me she wanted a tour, make a lot of money, and then retire. Mm. That's how she put it, and that's what she did.
Because
she has an art gallery on Maui now.
Mm-hmm.
Starship was a reinvented offspring of the 1960s band Jefferson Airplane, who gave us White Rabbit, of course.
Didn't they go, they were Jefferson Airplane, then they were Jefferson Starship, then they were Starship, right? Does that sound right?
Yes.
That sounds right.
Yeah, but that's not mentioned in here.
No.
Jefferson Airplane, go ask Alice.
They were called Jefferson Starship for a little while.
Well, yeah, I guess that's it. By the 80s, the band had undergone name and personnel changes, becoming Jefferson Starship and then just Starship.
Yeah.
And they needed to brighten up its brand. The stage was set for We Built This City. Mickey Thomas is the singer. He says, I wasn't exactly a Starship fan. I came out of soul music. Boy, this is just the other way.
Yeah.
There were always different members coming and going, so the band was constantly evolving. I shaved my mustache. We were reinventing ourselves, so I wanted to reinvent my personal look as well. The music itself was a huge gamble.
So Marty Balin was their lead singer for years and years under Airplane and part of Starship, but he was already gone by this time, I think.
I think
he had anything to do
him.
With it. Maybe.
No, it didn't, because he died later. Grace Slick, also a singer in the song, here's her quote about the song We Built This City. And I'm quoting, I was such an A-word for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to make up for it by being sober, which I was all during the 80s, she told Vanity Fair in 2012. So I was trying to make it up to the band by being a good girl.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we want a good Grace Slick.
Mm.
She was going to sing a song called We Built the City on Rock and Roll. Slick said her reaction was, oh, you're kidding me. That's the worst song ever.
Well, any city manager will tell you developing a city on rock and roll is just not a very clear way. Voters tend to agree with that.
Right. Cleveland tried to do it.
That's true. Memphis has done it. Nashville's done it.
Bernie Taupin, lyricist best known for his work with Reginald Dwight, Elton John. The original song was, this is what he says, a very dark song about how club life in L.A. was being killed off and live acts had no place to go. Peter Wolf got a hold of the demo, totally changed it. If you heard the original demo, you wouldn't even recognize the song. So it sounds like Bernie's trying to remove himself
right.
from the situation.
Right.
Peter Wolf ruined it is what it sounds like he's saying. Peter Wolf, co-writer and producer, Journey was recording in the studio next door, and every time I opened the door, their band members were standing outside with their mouths open.
Gasping.
This is the Starship. It's unbelievable.
In a negative way, right? They meant that negatively or positively?
I don't know. There's an exclamation point.
No.
I was actually going to ask if Journey was on the honorable mention.
Oh, my God. What are you going to slam
mention.
Journey?
Oh, yeah.
Worst song?
Don't Stop Believin'.
Oh, Kevin.
Worst
what?
Song. Yeah.
Kevin.
I said it.
Okay, first of all, every time I hear that song, I think of my team, the White Sox.
Right.
That's all
that
I can think of now.
Partially why it's
World
the worst,
Series.
Maybe.
It is not. It is an awesome song. Can you play a little of the chorus of We Built This City? A lot of people love this. It's been featured in commercials on TV. It was in The Muppets in 2011, mm-hmm. Rock of Ages in 2012. It has. I have.
The
this
stage
song's
show.
Been everywhere.
It has. I, for some reason, I don't have much reaction to it. It just seems like a dated song. It seems more techno pop than it seems rock to me. Is this a rock song?
Well, the '80s was a time
where
you used the electronic
right.
drums, which really had a really
right.
bad sound to it.
Yeah.
All right. I love this song.
What does that mean? What does that mean? Marconi
Wait,
plays.
Stop it right there.
Marconi
plays
the mamba.
Listen to the radio. So obviously, listen
Marconi,
to the radio. He invented the radio,
right? So he plays the mamba. What does that mean?
There's a little mamba going on in this song somewhere.
Did you just right. listen to the radio?
I guess I'll have to.
All right, go.
But sometimes, don't you think that songwriters, no, I don't mean this as disrespectful to songwriters, but they just need something that fits. Like, maybe that has meaning, but I think whoever wrote that line just went, no, it fits. But it doesn't make sense.
You could have used any other word. Marconi
right.
plays a fiddle.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do anything.
Yeah.
Marconi walked a dog.
Yeah.
Listen to the radio.
Marconi invented the radio, right?
Yeah,
right.
There
did.
You go.
Yeah, but where does the mamba come in?
Yeah.
Maybe that's how he did it. I don't know.
I'm too literal, I guess.
Papa loves mambo.
Why isn't that in there?
I don't know.
Right, listen to the radio.
It.
That makes sense,
that
actually.
Part
that
makes
would work.
Sense.
Yeah.
Everybody now.
I don't like this, but it's by far not the worst song of. It's not the worst rock song of all time.
I don't think it's the worst.
Like I don't like if this comes on, I don't immediately run for the dial to switch it.
I crank it up,
which
embarrasses my whole family. It's a kind of a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
But
even when it first came out, would you call it a guilty pleasure even then? Or is it a guilty pleasure now that, you know?
I think I like it more now than I did when it came out.
Because this song's 30 years old already, right?
I don't know.
It's at least 30 years old.
It was in the 80s.
Yeah.
I just sing along to it. It's
1985.
31 years ago.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Can I tell you what I think is the worst? Can we take a break and then I'll tell you what the song is that when I hear, I get sick to my stomach.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. Right. Rolling Stone magazine and another publication called Blender also said this is one of the worst popular tunes ever recorded.
How about that?
Ever recorded.
That says a lot.
That's harsh, man.
That's out of a million songs.
Although, I don't know. I can't think of a hideous song.
There's nothing that when you hear, you just don't go, I cannot listen to this. I got to switch.
I got one. About that.
Do you have one, Ryan? Well, all right.
And 312-981-7200, jump in with your worst song ever.
Yeah.
It's not this one.
I don't think it is this one. All right. Back after this, 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
GQ Magazine has come up with what they are saying is the worst rock and roll song of all time, and it's We Built the City by Starship, which was a number one hit for the band in 1985. Number one.
I knew it made the top ten. I'm shocked that it was number one. So what does that say about us as a nation to choose a song? Although if you look at the Billboard charts, there have been a bunch of songs up way, way up that you go, that was number three, that was number two,
Watched Vinyl before it was canceled on HBO, you would know why some of these songs got up there in the charts. And plus, this We Built the City was on every time you turned on the radio.
Yeah, it was. It got a lot of airplay.
All right, so we wanted to find out the worst songs ever. And Ryan has one and you have one.
Yeah.
I don't think I have one.
There's not a single song that when you hear you just go, oh, God, this.
I find the beauty in all of music.
Do you? Yeah. That's commendable. Ryan, what's yours? What song just turns your stomach?
We were introduced in 1998 to a guy named Kid Rock with the song Ba with the Ba.
Oh, I know
that
song.
He basically took some syllables, put them together, and introduced himself to the world with those.
Yeah.
I like this song, too. And
Diggy said, up, drop the boogie, guys, just so you know.
That's a bad song.
Do
you enjoy that, really?
It doesn't bother me. I love All Summer Long, so where he totally lifts Leonard Skinner and Werewolves of London.
Yes.
But I kind of liked that song, believe it or not. And the Cowboy, babe. All right, maybe I'm a bit of a Kid Rock
song. Well, I don't know. Kid Rock, that song was just... I don't know. Yeah, I don't mind some of those songs you're talking about.
You hate it, though?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
He really announces his name. I mean, he spends about 30 seconds there just yelling that he's Kid Rock.
Yeah.
We get it. We know you.
I think Wang Chung told him that that's allowable. Just put your name in the song. People like to hear your name. Just throw your name in there. What's the song out now? There's some woman singing about they know my name or just say my name, and then she says a whole bunch of wrong names. Do you know what song that is? I hear that at my health club all the time. They play that every day at my health club.
Sounds familiar.
They call me something.
Thinking of the Ting Tings, that's not my name?
Yeah, that's what it is.
I like that
song. Sounds like 10 years old, isn't it?
It sounds like a cheerleader. It's not even a song. It's just a cheerleader throwing out a cheer.
How does that go? Oh, I like this. Hey, Mickey, you're so fun.
Listen,
you're so fun. You blow my mind. Hey, Mickey.
Listen to how idiotic the lyrics are to this. They call me help. They call me sexy. They call me her. They call me Jane. They call her sexy. They call her Stacy. They call her. They call her Jane. She needs to associate with people who are smarter is her problem.
That song's also from 2008.
Is that what that's from?
Yes.
They played at my health. I'm serious. Every time I'm in my health club.
Did you say a new song?
No, I didn't say new. I'm saying every time I'm at the health club, they play it. There's a video screen, and they play these songs on this giant video screen, and no matter where you go, you're subjected to them. So I just go, oh, please. You make me want to just get fat. You just make me not want to work out. Please stop playing this. But for me, this is the all-time clincher. I hate the song with a passion. There's never a time where it's on my radio for more than a second before I turn it off. Kevin, can you play this?
He's ready.
Coming.
Here it comes. This is actually a better version of it. this version I could tolerate.
I love it.
His machine is too smart to want to play this.
We're doing our EAS test right now.
The EAS test is a better song than the one I'm about to play.
Oh, I'm dying to know.
It's and you know it, and most people actually really like this song. I don't know what it is about this song for me.
Here's a little song I wrote. I
hate this.
Might want to sing it note for note.
Hate this
don't
song.
Don't worry. Be happy.
Bobby it's cool, McFerrin. Though. He does all the noises himself.
In every life, not every noise. Not this one. You make it double, don't worry. Couldn't you write this song in your sleep?
No.
Seriously? He's what?
Doing all the instrumentation.
And every one of them is awful. Like, and I know that that was Bobby McFerrin's thing, and good for him. But,
I love it.
He's selling a vibe. He's not selling the lyrics.
I'm not buying that vibe or the lyrics.
Are you saying the lyrics in We Built This City are better than those lyrics?
By the way, these songs are all going to be the bumper music you guys are going to have for the next 2 weeks, I'm sure. Kevin's plotting right now.
I know.
I like that song.
I know a lot of people like that song.
I don't know what it is about it,
but if I'm driving and that song comes on, I either turn the station or I purposely crash my car.
See, the whole thing is you don't want to ever be happy.
No,
I've had 14 cars already because of this.
We have to take a break.
Oh, all right, a break. And then more of this kind of behavior, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You don't hate this song, do you?
I love this song.
Very talented Jewel, who made a pretty stellar performance on the Rob Lowe roast on Comedy Central.
Yeah, you know, the other day, you and I were discussing this roast on Comedy Central of Rob Lowe, and then we left, it was the end of part one, and on Steve Bertrand's show, he had on a man named Brian Reinblatt, and just in crossing with him, we learned that Brian's brother, George, was a writer for the Rob Lowe roast, and he's written for other roasts in the past. He's a comedy writer and a producer, and we put this whole thing together to have him on to find out what goes on behind the scenes at these roasts, and he's on the phone right now. Hi, George.
How's it going?
Great to talk to you. Your brother said some very nice things about you.
Yeah, this is very, very strange for me that you had my brother and me both on the same radio station within about 48 hours of each other. He's in Chicago right now promoting this at the Northbrook Court.
Yeah.
The Experience Rock and Roll, which is an awesome thing. If you're in Chicago, you should check that out. It's like fun for the whole family. What I do writing my roast, that is not fun for the whole family. You should never let a kid watch anything
but
I do at all.
Unfortunately, or fortunately for my kids, I watched it with my husband and two teenage boys. And
that's all right.
It was very dirty, and I got to tell you, you have gotten accolades like crazy because a lot of people were tweeting, you know, whoever helped write Jewel's material and the lyrics to her parody of her own song should have his own show. And that would be you, right?
It was, yeah. I was the one who helped her with the lyrics of her song, which was crazy. To get her to redo one of her own songs and then put in my kind of wacky lyrics, I kind of felt nervous even telling somebody who's heard that. why are you singing these lines about how we're a 16-year-old, the horrible things you did.
That's something I couldn't believe that came.
She blew people away. I was very amazed. If you haven't seen the show, you should look up Jewel. She literally stole the show. Everyone said it. I had really seasoned comedians come up to me after and say, like, she did better than me. And she stole the show, and she did the funniest song, and it was great. And I'm just glad I could be a little part of it.
She was so great, and she looked amazing. I got to tell you, the heels, the dress, she is a beautiful girl. And boy, did she get dealt a lot of stuff about her bad teeth.
Yes. It's tough because I help her with her stuff and really, really spend a lot of time working with her. But then the minute she leaves, I have to go around and start writing jokes against her, which I try to keep quiet. But yeah,
you just did.
I thought she looked good, too. She was a very weird one. I've never seen something quite like it. I think people liked her so much that it almost felt, everyone felt protective of her. When people were insulting her, people were like, hey, you can't say that about her. You can insult everyone else here, but just don't say that about her. It was pretty crazy.
But all bets are off with those roasts, right, George? I mean, there's no limit to what you can say about anybody there. You could just go to town on anybody. That's what they do.
That is, and that's why it takes a very, very special celebrity to agree to this. Like, even Rob Lowe said nothing's off limits, and
good.
He has some things with his family sitting in the front row that you'd expect to say are off limits, but he was totally cool, and that's always when these are the best. When somebody like that, an A-list star, will not only allow people to say whatever about them, but also then give it back at the end, it's pretty amazing to see, and that's always kind of what makes it the best. And the roasts are only good when you're kind of laughing at yourself. Like,
sure.
People don't want to see somebody burst into tears. They'd rather see these people laugh when you make a joke about them. And Jewel, Rob Lowe, Peyton Manning, all these people are such great sports, so that's kind of what made it so fun.
Bill and I were talking about this after the fact, and you haven't seen the whole thing yet.
I've seen bits and pieces, not the whole thing.
Because I watched it, and we were talking about it, and that's when I asked you, Bill, like, does somebody else write the material, which is how we found out George Reinblatt, who we're talking to right now. I cannot believe the Ann Coulter stuff. I am not a fan of hers, but, you know, as you said, most people are good sports and they take it. She looked like she was imploding on the inside. It was so horribly mean, funny, but mean. And I just, my big question, George, and I guess maybe you can help, why was she asked to be there?
Well, she wanted to be there because she's promoting a book.
That's exactly what you said, Bill.
Yeah.
But boy.
But you know what? As much as I personally might not agree with what she did sit there and take it. And
she totally did.
And literally, there was times when the head writer said to us, guys, you got to start preparing if she leaves and what we're going to do. But she didn't. She was tough. She took it. And in the end, as harsh as she got it, and the whole internet was blown up saying, oh, it's turned into the roast Ann Coulter, which isn't quite true. She got some harsh jokes, but everyone got some harsh jokes. She just kind of didn't take it as well. But in the end, I think she won. I think she got what she wanted because every headline's about her. Every headline's mentioning her, and she's got a new book to promote. And she's kind of come across as a bit of the victim. But that being said, do I think she knew what she was in for? I don't really. I think she was the first one. Every time we get one of these people, we call them, and it's always a pretty standard answer, like first conversation, like, hey, have you guys seen a roast? Even if they haven't, they'll lie. She was the only one to go, no, I've never seen a roast. I don't know what this is. So we tried to explain it to her. We tried to get her to watch them, but I think she still might have been a bit surprised. But overall, I got to hand it to her for sitting there and taking a whole room of people hating on her. And
I know.
She just took it and kept going, and I think in the end she got what she wanted.
But, George, you know, we were saying the other day, she's kind of accustomed to that sort of reception. Whenever she's on Bill Maher, it's usually Bill Maher and one or two panelists against her. Whenever she's on any of the news shows, they do kind of gang up on her. And, I mean, depending on if you're a fan of hers or not, you can say it's gone too far. But you do, when you go in there, you know what you're in for. I mean, there's a history of that. So she can't really complain. Has anybody ever, in the years you've been doing these roasts, has anybody ever left, walked out during one?
No, I don't think they have. It is so funny. The people, we sometimes get warned, like, oh, this guy's really sensitive, or this person's this or that. And it's always the opposite. Like, there was people legitimately concerned when Mike Tyson came on Charlie Sheen's roast.
Yeah.
Are beating people up.
Yeah.
But when he's there, he's not only the nicest guy, he's the most friendly, and he had the most fun. So people will always surprise you with their reactions, and then sometimes the most, like, brutal comedians will be sensitive about something you've said about them. So you kind of never know, but I've never seen anyone walk. The only thing with Anne was she did do a lot of her own material. She didn't really trust us writers as much, and kind of turn down a lot of the stuff we tried to offer, because we did, one of our goals was to make her, like, swing back just as hard, and I don't know if that was accomplished as much. That was
the
only reason
she did
one-sided.
She, and that's why I was wondering if she wrote her own material, because of course I don't remember who said, boy, I think it was Rob Lowe at the end, or Jeff Ross, that, you know, you can't write, you can write 11 books, but you can't write one stinking joke.
Ross.
Yeah. And she did okay, but I mean, I'm telling you, that audience was not receptive to her. They either groaned or it was dead silent.
Oh, no.
It was really not a great reception, and I'm surprised she didn't walk off. So I guess she did stick to her guns.
Yeah. George.
It was pretty tough at times for reception.
It was. You got to see it.
Said that reception was better than it was edited to be, and wants us to release the full version of the tape, but I don't think it'll be as different as she thinks it was from her memory. So.
And including a big grimace from Maria Shriver, I noticed as well.
Yeah,
Maria Shriver and all her kids are all sitting with Rob Lowe's family, like dead center. So that was fun to see.
Our guest is George Reinblatt. George is one of the writers for the Rob Lowe Celebrity Roast that is playing right now on Comedy Central. We'll take a quick break and then back with more questions for George. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder along with our guest George Reinblatt. George is one of the writers responsible for the Comedy Central roast of Rob Lowe, and he's done others in the past. He's a comedy writer and a producer. Wendy has a great question for you, George.
I just will ask it. Here's the deal. Pete Davidson was on from SNL, and we have learned and we've known that his father perished in 9/11 in the attacks. There were some jokes referring to that, several of them, I believe three, and it's a sensitive thing. It still kind of shocks you to hear it, and he can't react like, oh, that's terrible, that's a low blow, because people are looking at him. So how does that get in there?
Well, yeah, it's always a weird thing, and trust me, you never want to go after something that people don't like. The irony of Pete is that a lot of his act is making fun of that.
Yeah, that's true.
He didn't do this on the night of, so he's the one who kind of opened the door to permission. If you watch the Bieber roast, because he's done two roasts in a row, so he did the last one, the Justin Bieber one, he made a lot more jokes about it. This one, I think he just wanted to go a different direction than the one he did last year. So last year was kind of a bit more equal with him making fun of it, and this year it's more one-sided, but if you watch both, I think you'd understand that he's actually the one who's fine with it.
And
as strange as it might seem to the rest of us, and who knows if any of us were in that situation, we'd be laughing the same way.
And I mean, it was like terribly funny, but it's just you're mad at yourself for laughing. It's like you're groaning, but it was good. And how can he smoke on stage? Aren't you not supposed to smoke inside a building?
I don't know about that. He was just breaking every rule. At first, he was just smoking backstage, and then somehow I looked on stage, and he was smoking on stage.
It was so old school to see the cigarette smoke wafting up.
Well, those old roasts, the Dean Martin roasts, people were smoking.
I think it's very old school if you actually think that was a cigarette he was holding.
So. Yes. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what kind of made it a bit crazier.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
George, years ago, there was a comedian, a very talented comedian named Patrice O'Neill, who died, sadly. And he hit the target that everybody used on him was his own illness. Before he died, he'd come on these roasts, and the other comedians would make fun of the fact that, you know, enjoy him now because you're not going to be able to see him much longer, you know, that kind of thing. And he seemed fine with that.
Generally, all these comedians are fine with, like, you kind of know where to hit and where not to, and especially when it's a comedian who people know, or like internally on the dais, they kind of know what's open, what isn't, and and normally on a roast, if, like I said, we are not out to really hurt people as much as people think. It seems like a very bizarre way to say this, considering our job is just to insult people, but the goal is to always make the person laugh. It's to push them to the extreme of, oh, I can't believe you said that to them, but to have the person laughing. If you say something and they don't laugh, it's just bad TV. It's a bad vibe. It's bad everything. So, yeah, all these things might seem crazy to an outsider, but in this world, we're kind of allowed to go there.
And that's what it is. That's what we watch for. We want to see the biting jokes. I mean, Rob Lowe was such a great sport. It was weird seeing his wife and kids up front with nannies and 16-year-olds being mentioned a lot.
Yeah.
That was pretty...
That's the thing. Like, Rob Lowe is a huge fan of the roast. Like, anytime I'd mention a roast or something to him, he could quote the past ones. He knew it was happening. And he knew to take it. He personally had to turn some people down the dais, he was saying, because they wanted to leave certain things off limits. He's like, no, nothing's off limits, and this is just how it is. And it's why it's kind of hard to get a celebrity to agree to do this sometimes, because these normally in Hollywood, these people are so protected about everything that's said to them. This is the only time they're really fair game and don't know what's going to be said about them.
Now, George, here's the most ironic thing of all. And this is something your brother Brian told us when we met him the other day. He said, the thing you have to know about my brother is this. He writes these jokes that a lot of people think are dirty and they're extremely brutal. He said, but in reality, he's the nicest guy. He doesn't even swear. He's very polite. Is that true? Is that how you are normally?
Yeah. People don't always seem to understand it because I'm like the nice Canadian guy in these writing rooms on all this stuff. But yeah, I can pull out the brutalness when I need to. But and that's why it is all, to me, it's all part of the show. It's all part of fun. I'm really out to get anybody. And but yes, I would like to think I'm a nice person deep down.
And speaking of nice people, we had Ralph Macchio in the studio with us a couple weeks before the roast. Did you help with his material? Because he probably second favorite next to Jewel. I mean, he was awesome.
Yeah, Ralph Macchio, it was great. If you haven't seen him, he did this video a while back for Funny or Die, just kind of how he's too nice a guy and needs scandals. And I kind of watched that and thought that should be his thing, that he's kind of jealous of Rob Lowe for having these scandals and having a career. And he went with it. And he was a really fun guy and really open to doing all this stuff and great actor. And it was really funny because there's so many jokes saying about how unemployed he is and how he hasn't worked in 30 years. And he emailed us all a picture of his house, like on the beach. He's like, this is what the 80s bought me. You guys make fun of me for being homeless.
Right. You should change your name to Ralph Macchiato and maybe find a job at Starbucks.
Yeah, but he's you know what? He's once again, he was a great sport about all this. And yeah, he's quite comfortable with where his life is, and he seems to be doing quite well. So it's he was willing to have some fun with it, because he literally is like, oh, you know what? I'm just hearing jokes about like what a loser and what how homeless I am. But he goes, I'm leaving here to go film a TV show with like David Simon did The Wire, like in an hour from now. I'm like, all right, well, he's got it going on more than we let on, but he was fine along with it.
George, you do a great job on the roast. If you're in Chicago anytime soon, by all means, stop up. We'd love to meet you in person.
Oh, for sure. No, I love to come there anytime. I'm a big Blackhawks fan, so I try to make it down when I can. And like I said, my brother has a show, the Experience Rock and Roll at the Northbrook Court, so I'm definitely going to come down and check that out at some point soon.
Please do.
And I love your website, georges.com, all written out, .com.
Yes, it's very hard to say sometimes. GeorgesDotCom.
I love it.
But it's fun. It's good to see what I'm doing and see what else I've been up to. But and yeah, if anyone can watch the roast on a repeat or on the online or anything, check it out because it was really fun.
They're very funny. Thanks, George. It was great meeting you.
Oh, thank you guys. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. George Reinblatt is his name. Again, his website is Georges.com and then .com.
It's great.
Visit
thanks,
the website.
George.
Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thank you so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. It's part two of our Thursday show. We're glad you're listening. You can contribute at 312-981-7200.
I like this song.
This is a good song.
Not the worst song ever.
No. Over at Medical Express, Wendy, and this is a website that I don't visit often, only if I'm in a hurry. Medical Express. The scientists who work over there at Medical Express were trying to figure out what the difference is between sad people and happy people. Do you want to guess what the difference is? Because it's very clear cut. They have come up, they used data, and they came up with a very specific difference between sad people and happy people. Do you want to guess what that could possibly be?
One cries.
The sadder people do tend to cry. I can't argue with that. That's
I don't know
true.
What they're going for here, so I'm anxious to find out.
They say, the scientists at Medical Express say that sad people tend to live in the moment. They're thinking about what's happening currently, right now, whereas happy people tend to project forward and look forward to things all the time. Whatever's happening now is fine, but they're always looking in advance.
I would think it's completely the opposite.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree either. I don't think so.
You're sad when you start like remembering sad things. If you're living in the moment,
right.
Man, you are happy because
right.
You don't care about what yesterday brought, and you don't care about what's happening tomorrow.
Isn't that curious? I agree. I'm on your side here. I would think that the best way to be happy would be to pick from past, present, and future, depending on what your needs are at that moment. Sometimes, you know how sometimes you'll remember things from years gone by or days gone by, and that'll make you happy. Other times you're like, you know what's coming up is Christmas, and that's a good time. And then other times you just go, hey, I'm in a restaurant with some friends right now. We're enjoying a meal. This is a good time. So wouldn't a happier person be able to pick and choose between the three?
I don't know, because when you think back about, oh, I did that when I was a kid, you don't think, oh, my God, it gave me great joy. You think back of it going, boy, that was fun when my parents used to take me to Kiddyland. Boy, I miss my parents.
But it makes you sad?
Yes.
Does it?
I think memories... Mm. You can have good and fond memories,
right.
But they kind of tug at your heartstrings a little bit because they're memories.
Right, sure.
A lot of times those people have passed.
Right.
So I think if you're sad, you're thinking about the past.
But wouldn't you say on an almost daily basis, I'll even say a daily basis, doesn't something remind you of something from 3 years ago, 10 years ago, your childhood, and you just... You know, without going into the specifics of who in that memory is no longer with us, don't you just go, boy, that was a good time. The time I did that, loved it. That was fun.
Yeah, but it's
that's what pictures are, right? When you're looking at pictures, look at your average person when they're looking at pictures. They're smiling. Oh, I remember we went to the Wisconsin Dells. That was a fun time and a big smile on their face.
Yeah, but then it makes me sad because you look and go, God, I was so much skinnier then. Oh, my mom was alive then.
Oh,
to me, anything in the past brings sadness.
It makes you sad,
even
does
if it's
it?
A happy memory.
It still does.
Yeah, because it's not. It's already happened.
Oh,
it's
man.
Like a bummer that it already happened.
Oh,
Kevin,
that's tragic.
Well, I was going to say, going along with Wendy, Lao Tzu. Founder, ancient Chinese philosopher says, if you are depressed, you are living in the past. If you are anxious, you're living in the future. If you are at peace, you are living in the present.
Meditation. Very nice.
I totally get that, too, yeah. Because when I stress out about things, it's usually like, oh, I got to go do this after work. I have to. How am I going to get this done before then? That is, we call it anticipatory anxiety. It's
right.
Because you're anticipating something that you're stressing about.
Interesting.
I'm just living for like right now, 2/13/26.
According to the people over at Medical Express, for when you need medical advice in a hurry, you are sad.
I'm not.
It even
I feel
says your
awesome
name in the report.
Right now.
You're mentioned twice in the report. They call it the Snyder effect. don't you? Here's a little trick that I taught myself years and years ago. I always have things, sometimes they're later in the week, sometimes they're later in the year, sometimes they're a year away. I always have a half a dozen things to look forward to.
That's called the dangling carrot. When they dangle a carrot in front of you,
yeah.
I need that. I'm going to get a pedicure after work. That's my dangling carrot for today.
And it's effective, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you say more times than not, you need a bunch of things to go, hey, in a couple of weeks... The Cubs are going to be in the playoffs. Won't that be nice? And then the Blackhawks are going to start their season. Won't
That's
that
good.
Be nice? And then my daughter's going to come home from college. Won't that be nice? Like, I've got a bunch of those things.
Gives you something to live for.
But the question is, are you enjoying the moment when you do get, when you do see the playoffs or when you do get the nails done? I mean,
yes.
Are you enjoying that moment or are you already thinking, okay, what's the next thing that I'm going to look forward to?
A little bit of both. Don't you think? That's what I was saying before about the balance of past, present, and future. You kind of have to divvy it up.
No,
so that
I'm just living for the moment. From
only
this
for the moment.
Forward.
Don't tell the people in Medical Express. They will not be happy to hear this now or in the future. I'll read you the story. It's on MSN. Well, let's take a quick break. And
all
then we'll
right,
get into this
that.
A little bit deeper. And if you want to join in, we're at 312-981-7200. Call us in the future. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We're talking about being happy and being sad and... And what does the study say that the only difference is?
Medical Express monitored 30,000 people, and they found that usually sad people tend to live in the moment. People who are always depressed about things are living in the right now, whereas opposed to more happy and optimistic people are always looking ahead to what's coming next and not so much living in the moment. Both you and I find fault with this.
I just disagree. And we were talking about looking back at pictures. It's not, I don't know, I do get kind of sad about it.
I don't know anybody else who, I don't think, like, I've never looked at a picture and it's made me sad, even when it is somebody who's no longer with us. But you say almost all the time when you look at pictures, you go, talk about the wedding example that you told me.
I'm looking at my wedding album and it's like, oh my God, I had so much fun that day. Oh, remember that? And then, oh, there's my mom. She's no longer with us. She died a month after my wedding. It starts bringing you down and you can't go back and change it. I can't go back and have that wedding again. When you're reading a book and it's so good and you don't want to get to the end because you're enjoying it, then you get to the end and it's like, oh, it's over. What do I have to live for now? And here's 847 has just texted us. Maybe you can understand better. My son got married last weekend. I was so excited with all the planning and the festivities. Now it's over and I'm feeling a really huge letdown because it's over and now it's back to all the normal, boring routine and I'm really missing all the extra excitement.
You know, that's what postnatal depression is. That's what post, you know, a lot of people who get really sad after the holidays, they go through this thing where...
Postpartum.
Postpartum. What did I say? Postnatal? Postpartum. Postpartum.
Prenatal.
Did I mention I'm a doctor?
Doctor Express.
Yeah, I'm a doctor. I work over at Medical Express. Use our drive-up window for 10% savings. A lot of people get really, like, as soon as Christmas is over, they're like, oh, I look forward to that for a month, and now it's over, and now I have to go back to regular life. Or after vacations, you always hear people come back, and they go, oh, now what?
I'm ready to get back to work. Yeah. See, everybody's different. And postpartum depression is hormones.
Yes. It is. Are you proud of me for not saying
yes,
don't pay her?
Yes, that's my favorite.
I grew up.
In the world.
I'm a doctor now.
How do you make a hormone?
I wouldn't know.
Don't pay her.
I don't know if that's
true.
Come on. I don't know if that's
true. All right, Pat, what are we talking about here?
You know what? I have this old saying I've heard over the years, and it says, don't cry that it's over, smile that it happened. And it's always so pretty because, I mean, we all get sentimental as we're looking at pictures and stuff, but you got to remember, we were there, and it was a fun time.
Pat,
so that's how you go on.
I know that phrase, and somebody just died a month or two ago, and that's what closed off their ceremony. Those words, don't cry that it's over, smile that it happened, but I can't think of who. Do you know who it was?
You know what? I thought it was Charles Schulz from Peanuts. I thought that's what that was. Years ago, I remember it, and I think that's where it was. We'll have to look it up.
Yeah, all right.
Google it. All right. No, but, yeah, but
that's a healthy way of being.
Yeah, but wait, now Pat just said it, and now it's making me sad.
Oh, she didn't mean to do that.
Oh, no. No, you know what? It's fun to look at old stuff. I mean, you do get sentimental. I do, too. But you just got to remember that, God, I was there, and it was so much fun. And we had a lot of fun, and your mom enjoyed it. And it's just, that's how you have to look at it, because you bring yourself down, you know?
That's why I'm living in the moment. Living in the moment.
I'm sad about it.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, carry on. You're welcome.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Seuss wrote it.
Dr. Seuss wrote it, but somebody died in the last 6 months.
And stole it from Dr. Seuss?
I don't know if they stole it. I don't think they stole it. But somebody's ceremony, those were the closing words. Somebody of some fame who just died within the last 6 months. Because I'm like, God, I know that from somewhere. Why do I know that? And I knew it was Dr. Seuss. But it's driving me crazy, whoever said it. They said it at their service.
Well, if you go to U.S. Earns online,
yes,
that's one of the quotes for a loved one's eulogy.
Oh,
so they're...
somebody got it from there. All right.
USEarns.com. Not much.
Yeah, I guess not. URNS or EARNS?
URNS.
All right.
Earn.
URNS.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi there. How you doing, guys?
Oh, we're doing great.
Wendy's sad.
I'm sad now.
She lives in the moment.
Well, let me try and cheer you up. I actually differ from all of that. I don't think it's about the future or the past. I think that those people that are constantly thinking about themselves all the time, about how to make me happy, how to, you know, improve myself, and it's all about me, those are the miserable people. But those people that are thinking about other people, that, like, for example, the people that I go to church with, who's always trying to help other people, who's thinking about, you know, how can I help so-and-so, what can I do to bless somebody else, those people tend to be more joyful because they get joy out of seeing other people encouraged and strengthened and blessed. So those people tend to be more joyful because their minds are not always focused on themselves. I think the more selfish we become and more focused on ourselves, the more miserable we are.
That is so true.
I really agree with you. It does make you feel good to do something for someone else. You get pride in yourself for doing it. Like, yep. Wow, I rock that.
Well, I obviously have a different worldview, you know, a Christian worldview. But, you know, I know that the more I think about myself and the more I think about, you know, what I'm missing in my life or what I don't have, oh, my goodness, I get into a tailspin of misery.
Yeah.
But then when I'm focused on, you know, what I have already and what I've got to be grateful for and focused on how I can help other people, my whole attitude changes. So, you know, I just thought I'd leave that.
That makes sense.
And plus, it makes more sense when you say it because you have a beautiful accent. Where are you from?
Wisconsin.
Yeah, you could tell I'm a cheesehead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've lived here for a while now, but I'm from Southampton, England.
Beautiful.
But I've lived here for 22 years, so you just can't get rid of me.
No, you don't want to get rid of it.
We
it
don't
sounds
want
great.
To.
Tracy, thanks. Wise words. Right. Appreciate it.
Thank
Take
you,
care.
Guys. Take care. Bye.
All right. Winnie the Pooh had words to live by.
No, that eulogy was not from Winnie the Pooh.
No, I have another one.
Oh, you have a different one. Okay.
There's a whole eulogy Pinterest page, people.
Is there?
So whatever celebrity used the don't cry, whatever. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Right. That was... at Eva Perón's service, they said that.
This is what Winnie the Pooh said. Think about this one.
Oh, bother? So he said in his eulogy?
I love honey.
Oh, bother.
See, you've never seen he and C-3PO in the same room.
Right.
That's all I got to tell you.
Right.
They're both gold.
Yep.
How lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard.
Winnie the Pooh died?
No.
Oh.
Well...
that's what they're inferring.
But he's just saying how lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard.
Oh, yeah.
So be thankful that you have something that means
right.
so much to you.
Right.
But again, it's depressing. You got to just live for the moment. Take your shirt off.
Well, he doesn't wear pants.
He doesn't wear pants.
All right, I'll take my pants off. I'm living for the moment.
His best friends are a pig and a donkey and a rabbit. You don't see that in the bear world very often.
And that donkey is not happy.
No.
Maybe not.
Saddest donkey in history.
That's because I'm living in the moment.
That's why.
And I don't like honey.
And his tail is like, it's like
thumbtacked
on.
It's not a thumbtack, it's a nail.
It's crazy.
My mom didn't love me. I'm such an ass.
Oh, come on. Don't. Not in front of Ryan. A quick break, some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, as it turns out, professional athletes love dating beautiful women. Did you know that? If you're a professional athlete, you will more than likely enjoy dating a beautiful woman. Did
and
you know?
Beautiful women enjoy dating athletes.
Yes. It's a two-way street. You're absolutely right. Right now, a lot of people have been criticizing Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is, of course, the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers.
He's hunky.
Yeah, he is. He definitely
is.
He's
a good
He's a great quarterback.
How can we get him here?
Oh, boy, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice to have Aaron Rodgers as the Bears quarterback? Right now, he's wearing...
Aren't you depressed?
Yeah, now I am. He's dating Olivia Munn. Do you know who that is? She's an actress. She was a correspondent for The Daily Show for a little while.
Oh, yeah, I get her and Olivia Wilde mixed up.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of girls. There's a couple of actresses named Olivia. Olivia Munn, very attractive girl, very good actress, dating Aaron Rodgers. So critics are saying you got to keep an eye on Aaron Rodgers because this could be distracting to him because, as I'm about to tell you, there's a long, long list of athletes that as soon as they start dating starlets, their productivity goes down. I said starlets because Rona Barrett told me to.
She had the best haircut.
Yeah, she did. Yes, she did. So I don't know if this is true, but I'll give you some names.
How about
of,
if they're dating anybody, their productivity goes down?
That's what I was thinking. Why would it be affected by some... Just because you're dating somebody famous, that shouldn't matter.
Has it impacted Jay Cutler at all?
Well, they're on the list.
Oh, sorry.
Ryan,
spoiler
they are
alert.
On the list.
Yep.
Well, you know, you should just abstain from sex during the season.
Right.
Put all your energy into the game.
You know what I would do if I was Kristen Cavallari, and I hope she's listening, because this is what I would do. I would say to Jay Cutler, if you want some of me, you go win a game and see what happens. Maybe that would change things. Maybe that would turn things around.
Does she care?
I don't know. It says when quarterback Jay Cutler and his wife Kristen Cavallari broke off their engagement for a brief amount of time before the 2011 season, some Chicago Bears fans were relieved that she would no longer be around to be a distraction to him and thought that his game would drastically improve. Spoiler alert, it didn't. But the duo got back together, and they married, and they had three children.
Not in that order. I think they had a couple before they got married.
Oh, did they?
I think so.
That's not what the Bible teaches us.
Jay's the Bible team, should teach us how to play football, too.
Right. There should be a playbook in the Bible. Jay's team hasn't been on a winning streak.
What?
Yeah, that's what it says here. No, that's what it says here, Wendy, that the Bears have not been on a winning streak since the one that they had when they won the title back in 2010. So do you blame any of Jay Cutler's inability to win games on the fact that he's married to the lovely Kristen Cavallari? I don't. I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I don't think there are a lot of athletes that are married and have families and do well.
Yeah, there are. There's plenty of them.
That's stupid.
Here's another example that they cite. You know who Justin Verlander is? He pitches for the Tigers. He was one of baseball's best pitchers. Almost unhittable.
But then...
then he meets the model Kate Upton.
Can I tell you, I don't swing that way, but if I did, I might ask her out.
She's attractive. You can't... you can't even debate that. She's very, very pretty. Doesn't he have a teammate, Ryan? Isn't there somebody named Upton on the Tigers?
Well, there are
Justin
couple,
Upton.
Yeah, there are a couple. I don't know if he's playing. These guys, they're brothers. They're the Upton brothers.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they're playing right now. I've pretty much only been focusing on the Cubs.
I wonder if he's distracted when he sees the name Upton come by on a jersey in the dugout. I would be. Kate Upton was so badly blamed for fiancé Justin Verlander's baseball performance that the New York Post called the Tigers pitcher's struggles the curse of Kate Upton. Oh, wouldn't that be a terrible curse to have thrust upon you?
Don't say thrust.
The curse of Kate Upton.
Does it work the other way? Did she not get runway deals because of him?
Well,
or did she not get acting?
Her career has done really, since they've been together, like she was a model for years before they met, but it was once they kind of became an item that everybody kind of became aware of her. So, yeah, I think maybe she may have benefited a little bit from their dating, I think. But I wouldn't blame any. He's not one of the more dominant pitchers in baseball anymore. He's okay, but he's not like he was 4 or 5 years ago. But I wouldn't put this on the curse of Kate Upton.
She has her own curse going on. This was just released from Fox News a couple days ago. She's on the cover of Glamour.
Yeah.
She is just smoking hot.
Yeah.
The once Sports Illustrated cover girl revealed that she was told to lose weight, quote, all the time. She said, at first I tried to diet to become their image, but eventually I realized that it wasn't realistic. This is just the shape of my body, Upton told Glamour magazine, so I had to block them out. I think that the people who are loudest about wanting to change you are the people with the least amount of vision and creativity. And
wow.
She says, in the beginning it was so hurtful, but now she has come to terms with her body and curvy figure. Where are the curves other than above her waist?
She's got some curves.
Yeah, but she is hardly in need of losing weight.
No, well, I would never tell her to lose. I wouldn't tell anyone to lose weight.
Look at her.
I wouldn't tell Fatty Arbuckle to lose weight. I go, you look great, Fatty Arbuckle.
Well, in keeping with the
they told me
name,
to lose weight when I was on the cover of Medical Express magazine.
Oh my God!
They said I need to lose weight.
Dr. Express
right.
needs to drop right. some lbs.
That's what they said to me, and I said I can't hear you.
This is a ridiculous study. Who wasted money on this?
The people at Wonderwall.com. If Verlander had been jinxed or distracted, more likely, it's the worst stretch of his career, into the worst stretch of his career by girlfriend Kate Upton. It would not be the first time that an athlete had encountered a major slump around the time that he was romantically linked with a pinup girl.
I think it would be more distracting if they didn't have someone to go home to, if they were out going to
right.
bars trying to pick up somebody.
Right. Right.
Seriously.
Right. I agree with you. Tom Brady has had a relationship with Gisele Bündchen.
You said it correctly. Good
job. You know,
job.
The Brady Bündchen.
He is so not good looking. I don't care what Anna DeVlantis says.
Do you think he's not attractive? He's Tom,
I don't find
he's Tom
him
to... Brady.
Bill, you sound offended.
I am offended.
Jay Cutler's better looking.
Okay.
Now I'm offended.
Now you're being silly.
Now
Woody.
You're just... Yeah.
I don't, to each his own. I don't think Tom Brady's that good looking.
What would you change about him to make him more attractive?
Head?
Just give him a different head?
Yes. If you put Jay Cutler's head on Tom Brady's body?
No, I'm not saying I...
That'd be a good sci-fi-dash sports film.
I'm wondering what kind of quarterback
that
would be.
Yes, would it be better or worse?
I know you can't really decide if it's... Because like, Jay's got the physical attributes, not the mental.
Head.
Yeah.
Tom Brady... I'm shell-shocked. Tom Brady married supermodel Gisele Bündchen in 2009, despite my letters. And in 2010, he was criticized for playing bad football as a result of his happy personal life. I know. It's upsetting, isn't it? 2 years later, Gisele blamed his Patriots teammates for literally dropping the ball. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
She was mad at his team, saying, "Hey, don't blame me. You guys are the ones who aren't winning games. I'm just watching."
Stupidity follows him around.
Yep, you're right. Video footage surfaced of her, Gisele Bündchen, saying, "You need to catch the ball when you're supposed to catch the ball. My husband cannot." And then she said a swear word that Gisele Bündchen shouldn't say. "You cannot blanking throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time," which is kind of half true. You can. But...
Does he like that she's sticking up for him?
Oh, I wonder.
I would say no.
I wonder. That would be awkward, right?
Yeah.
Back in the locker room. No, your wife said this. Your wife said that. That'd be rough.
And by the way, she's smoking hot.
Yep. "I can't believe they dropped the ball so many times," said Gisele Bündchen.
Does Kristen Cavallari stick up for Jay Cutler ever?
I don't know that she knows he's on the on the Bears. I'm not sure she's been made aware of that. I've watched some games. I didn't know he was playing for the Bears. I'm playing for the other team. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more discussion. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Is that possible? Could an athlete's performance go down just because he's dating or married to a beautiful woman? I don't think so. Give us a call or a text back after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wonderwall.com says...
The Oasis brothers are...
Oh, Wonderwall.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, so what they're saying is if you're a big-time athlete and you either start dating or get married to an attractive woman, a Hollywood starlet,
as you called it,
as I say, expect your performance to go down. And they've got a whole bunch of athletes in almost every sport that they say as soon as they hooked up with an actress or a singer or a model, that was the worst part of their career, that their career stats just took a hit. I can't imagine that being true.
And you mentioned Tom Brady, and
yeah.
I know Anna De Montes is in love with him.
Yeah.
I don't find him to be that attractive.
Hmm.
You and Kevin both do. Tammy, what do you think?
I agree with you. I do not think Tom Brady is attractive. I never did, even when he first came out. There was just something about him. He's a great quarterback or whatever, but I never, like, Dan Marino was like an attractive quarterback.
He was pretty cute.
Nothing to him. I just don't get it. I just, even Peyton Manny's cuter to me than Tom Brady.
I don't know about that.
What about Fran Tarkenton? Does he do anything for you?
Well, yeah.
A little bit?
You know.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, which you guys are not going to like, but I'm from Pennsylvania. You know, Ben is not good looking to me, but
Ben
he's a
Roethlisberger?
Yeah. He's not good
looking,
so.
Don't ask questions. Don't
no,
ask.
You
don't
have
ask.
You have a dog, obviously, and your dog is a big fan
no,
of Ben.
My husband.
Oh.
Oh. I told you not to ask. You didn't believe me.
He's a Bears fan. That's why, you know, he hates you. Pittsburgh fan, but, you know, quarterback's a quarterback, and I've never found Tom Brady attractive at all.
I agree with you.
Sorry,
interesting.
Where are you guys going together in the car together right now?
We are driving to Virginia. My oldest nephew is getting married, so we just left Chicago, and we're going to Virginia for my nephew's wedding.
Pretty fun. Well, thanks for listening to us as a couple. We enjoy that.
Oh, no. We listen to you guys all the time. We enjoy it. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tammy. Do you give a guy extra points? You know how we've talked about this with rock musicians, that even if a guy... is a rock and roller, and he's the ugliest of all uglies. The fact that he's a rocker, all of a sudden a woman goes, yeah, well, he's a pretty good-looking guy, you know?
On stage, everybody looks good, including Iggy Pop.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say his name, but that's the first one that comes to mind is Iggy Pop, who, honestly, if he was doing any other job, you'd see that guy and you'd run for the hills. But because he's a rock star, you go, no, he's an attractive guy. Do you give that same kind of a push to a guy who's an athlete? Do you go, well, he's a basketball player, he's a football player?
Mostly hockey players.
Do you? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. I like the hockey players because I like the mullet.
Right.
I think Julia has a problem with this study. And
what is it?
Good point.
Hey, kids.
Hi, Julia. What's up?
Hey, Mom. What's going on?
Okay. Here's my thought. So let's use inverse logic. So are the really, the players who are really good have ugly wives and girlfriends?
Hmm.
Because it doesn't mess with their heads and they're able to concentrate on the field.
Exactly.
Right.
They got nothing but ugly at home to worry about there, right?
Right.
All right, well, who's performing the best in all of sports? Look at their wives.
I was trying to think about that. So if we're thinking baseball, I've seen the Cubs' wives and girlfriends, and they're really good looking.
Yeah.
So
most of the Cubs are too young to be married. I don't think... Brian's not married yet. He's engaged. Rizzo's not married yet. Addison Russell isn't married yet.
So don't get married if you're a professional athlete?
Oh, I hope
not.
Is
that what we're saying?
Wow.
Again, abstinence makes the heart grow fonder.
Not sure that's true.
Thank you, Julia. We appreciate it.
They also cited as an example Jessica Simpson, who for a while dated Tony Romo, the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He had a very rough stretch.
Liked those two together.
Yeah. I remember that one specifically. The players on the Cowboys didn't want her to attend games because the other players, his teammates, were saying, it's distracting for him. He knows she's there. He's thinking about her. That's not fair. You can't do that.
No.
They mentioned Russell Wilson, the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, who has been dating Ciara.
Really?
Yeah.
Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson. You're going to like him. He's a handsome guy. Cameron Diaz for a while dated Alex Rodriguez.
Who didn't? Madonna.
Rodriguez is he's got quite a black book. Let me see. They began dating Cameron Diaz and Alex Rodriguez began dating in 2010 in February. They called it quits September of 2011, but they say that was a very rough period for him in terms of performance on the field. Kim Kardashian was... Oh, I forgot about this. Kim Kardashian was married to NBA star... I'm not sure he was a star. Chris Humphries.
Oh, you're right.
In 2011 for 72 days.
Right.
That's only a couple of games.
Get a mention.
That's a few games.
Russell Wilson is cute.
Yeah, he's a handsome guy. Mandy Moore. You know who that is?
Yes, I love her.
Mandy Moore dated... And I forgot about this one, too. Tennis star Andy Roddick. For a while in 2003 and 2004. Andy won the U.S. Open, but that same year, Mandy was blamed for being a distraction to his game. I remember that. There's a couple tennis players who have actress wives, and they show them a lot whenever they attend the games. Khloe Kardashian dated NBA player James Harden for a while in 2015.
Do they ever go beyond basketball, the Kardashians?
I don't think so.
They don't go football?
I don't. I'm trying to
golf.
Think if...
Can no. you see a golfer?
Badminton. I don't think that's a possibility. And you know who I forgot about that's on this list? This one just totally escaped my mind. For a while, Dennis Rodman, do you remember who he was married to?
Madonna.
No.
Oh, no. Carmen Electra.
Carmen Electra.
Yes.
They were married for 9 days.
See, that's just, that doesn't, you can't even say that.
In November of 1998.
I was
before he
married,
filed for an annulment.
I was married to Russell Crowe.
Were you married to Russell Crowe for a while?
For about 2 minutes in my dreams.
Oh, man.
Does that count?
No. No, 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 no. All right, we must take a break. In a little bit, Roe and Anna will be in. We'll find out what they have coming up on their show next. So stay here. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.